Nick.
Gentlemen.
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. And I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means the Monday morning movie reviews. Jim Laskowski is going to join me. We'll review. Only got a couple of movies to review. The big one, obviously, being Captain Marvel. And we'll review that. And then we're going to get a live report from Austin, Texas, from our good friend Eric Childress, who's at the South by Southwest Film Festival. So we're going to get some exclusive reviews of the stuff that he's seen. And we'll jump into that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And so that's what's coming up. Movie reviews, Monday morning movie reviews. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That'll be coming up a little bit later on as well. We've got some fun food stories to talk about. And we are going to get through the offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March. We were going to do that one last week. On Friday morning, I was going to go tell you about all these offbeat holidays, but we didn't get past, we just couldn't get past middle name Pride Day once we realized that Eugene in the newsroom hates his middle name, and we just kind of like got really we spent a good portion of that morning talking about Vic's middle name, Eugene. And Vic's not a fan. We were trying to. What was it, Vic? We were trying to figure out. Are there any cool characters in movies named Eugene?
Yeah, that's what it was. And I think it was Sunday, may have been Saturday night. I was sitting next to Jeannie on the couch, and I just looked because I had told her what we discussed.
Yeah.
And I looked over at her. It was either Saturday night or last night, and I said, I'll bet you they're still Googling it.
Yeah.
You won't find it.
Well, my favorite was the caller that called in and said, yeah, there's a Eugene in the movie Blue Steel with Jamie Lee Curtis. And I'm like, yeah, he's a psycho.
It
turned out to be a psycho.
And then the second one that a caller texted or called, and it turned out that the character was in fact named Eugene and then changed his name to something cool.
Right, exactly. Changed his name. Yeah, that's right. And then we also found out that anybody who has the name Eugene doesn't use it, and they go by Gene.
Right.
We were talking about Gene Hackman. We were talking about
Eugene Hackman.
Yeah,
What
about Gene Rayburn? We didn't even mention Gene Rayburn.
Oh, man, that's funny. I had an Uncle Rayburn, too.
Did you?
That was his brother, was Eugene.
Wow.
We're full circle now.
Look at that. And then he went on to
Eugene and Rayburn.
He went on to host Match Game.
Yeah. Right.
Well, anyway, we got a little distracted, so we'll get back to that a little bit later on. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Tom is producing this morning. Tom, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Nick?
Okay, man. Thanks for hanging out.
Anytime.
We've got some movie reviews that we're going to get to, and so much more. That's Tom. And then in the newsroom we just mentioned is Vic Vaughn. Vic, welcome back. Did you have a productive weekend?
I hope so, because productive in that I had long talks with one of my sons about finishing strong in school.
I see. You had to
to be determined whether or not it'll be productive.
I see,
but I have hope. I have high hopes.
Yeah, well,
he's a smart kid. He's just got that. He's just one of those type of kids who needs to be pushed in the right direction occasionally.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I get that.
Gently led, not yeah. really pushed, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I understand. I get that. I was one of those kids that needed to be pushed.
I was too occasionally.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was more than occasionally. I was, you know, it's funny because I was a terrible student in school. Terrible. I mean, not so much. I mean, in elementary school I was, but once I got to high school, it was like, I don't care. I just remember what an idiot I am. I'm not very math is definitely not my strong suit at all. And for some idiotic reason, when I was a junior, I decided to take trig, which is like the last thing that anybody who doesn't like math should not take.
Yeah, it's a bad move.
Oh no, it was a ridiculous move, and I didn't even last. I was like, I think I went to like five classes, and I was like, and even the teacher was like, Nick, you need to drop this class.
You're aiming too high.
Yeah, he's like, just drop it. So I did. I dropped the class, and I took metal shop instead, which was, I was much more suited for that.
Where are the guitars?
Yeah, metal shop, man. Yeah, no, it's just so. I mean, I don't even have no idea why I did that. You know, and it wasn't like a counselor said, you know, you should take trig or try to do this. I was like, you know what, I'm going to take trig. And even the people in the class, like when I showed up in the classroom, they were like, you know, like the rest, because they were all very smart kids in the classroom. And I walk in and they're like, what the hell is this guy doing in here? What? Does he know what trig is? Yeah.
Metal shop's down the hall.
Yeah, just go to metal shop. Just hang out there. So, Tom, were you a good student?
Sort of.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I got good grades, you know, mostly B's and A's and that sort of thing. But I was not a science person, and my counselor pushed me into honors chemistry.
Oh, boy.
And said, oh, yeah, no, you could do this. This is fine. And, you know, I accidentally blew up a few beakers here and there, set fire to my clothes once. Was not great with chemistry.
Wow. What? Now, Vic, were you a good student?
I think I was kind of like you. I got distracted at times, you know, decent grades, but got distracted at times and had to basically kind of calibrate, you know, what direction I was going in.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much each year I went through that annual calibration, I call it, between my dad and I.
Yeah,
so,
oh, I see.
Or my uncle, yeah, eventually, but yeah.
So. You know, it's funny because, like I said, I mean, you know, from first to eighth grade, I was a great student. I excelled. I was really, really great. But it was like once I got to high school, that all went right out the that all went right out the window.
Yeah.
And I coasted, man. I graduated high school with a 2.2 grade average.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better than a 2.1.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I can't even tell the difference between that. That's how smart I am. But no, I mean, you know, just not the strongest student in the world. So I'm just a dummy. That's what it comes down to.
Well, not everybody's made for the books, right?
You That's know, right. I mean, no, it's seriously.
Just,
I'm not,
and it took me a few years in the military to mature. I don't think I was ready for college right out of high school, you know?
Yeah.
I think a few years in the military and then going back did, you know, was a good, it worked for me, but not, you know, the book studying's not for everyone.
I know. That's true. It's true. So I'm not book smart. I'm not any kind of smart, I don't think. But anyway. All right. Well, listen, we have to break here because we want to come back and we want to talk to Jim Laskowski about the new movies. We'll get the movie reviews with Jim, and then Eric will join us. Eric Childress, he's live in the in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and we'll get some exclusive previews of some of the movies that he has seen while at the festival. All right. Attending a Chicago university and homeless, ashamed, struggling to survive, how a group of college students finally found refuge. Tuesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Along Hollywood Boulevard, some that you recognize.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we've got movie reviews that are coming up right now. And much more right here on 720 WGN. And every Monday morning, we do review the movies. This week, Jim Leskowski is going to be with me, and we're going to review the new films. And then we'll get a check-in with Eric Childress, who is in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And we'll get exclusive reviews of some of the movies that he saw, that he has seen down there in Austin for the South by Southwest. So, well, that'll be coming up as well. But, yeah. And then we have a bunch of food-related topics that we're going to get to. And we are going to get to those unusual holidays that you can celebrate in March. We didn't really get a chance to talk a ton about that because the last time, because we discovered Vic hates his middle name, Eugene, and we ended up talking about that for a while. So anyway, let's get to the movie reviews. Only a couple of movies to review this week. Jim Leskowski joins me every week, and let's say hello to Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, man. How you doing today?
I'm all right. So we've
great.
Got a couple of movies to talk about, and podcast that these guys did, you guys all did, about the 1989, has it all come out now? Is it all posted?
Oh, it sure is. I think we briefly talked about it last time, but it's officially all out now. Every year, Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me to go back in time, essentially 30 years. And we just talk about a particular year in film and analyze which films hold up, which ones have stuck with us, and, you know, which we think kind of have some kind of importance and, you know, just favorites. And I'm a sucker for nostalgia anyway. And, you know, we went back to 1989, like you mentioned, and that was officially the first year I started listening to you and Roy on WGN, probably more towards the end of the year. But this is a wonderful podcast tradition we started a few years ago, and we ended up having a six-hour conversation this time, and it was chopped into two parts, and it's a blast. I know people will really get a kick out of it, especially if they enjoy the movie review segment and miss hearing good old Colin as well. It's available as a bonus episode of the old show I used to host, Directors Club. So that's over at directorsclubpodcast.com, and I hope people will listen. It's great.
Okay, cool. That's out there right now, ready to go. All right, let's start. Jim, tell me about the movie Climax.
Okay, well, this is the latest film from French filmmaker Gaspar Noé, who has given us some very interesting films in the past, like Irreversible and Enter the Void, both of which I would say are quite challenging, to say the least. This movie, it starts off with a title card that says it's loosely based on a true story that occurred in France in the mid-90s, though I haven't actually verified that, so we could have like a Coen Brothers Fargo situation here. And we begin with the final moments of the story, because he likes to play with narrative, as most people who have seen his previous works know. In fact, the closing credits are at the beginning of the film, and then after we get a prologue, we are introduced to several characters via videotape interviews. It's essentially their auditions for this renowned international dance tour. And all these characters are played by actors I'm not familiar with, but they're all diverse in background, ethnicity, and some of them speak French, but a few do choose English. So the entire experience isn't subtitled throughout, but the majority of it is. Their video statements are seen on this like old TV that's also, you get to see some books and videotapes next to the TV, which kind of provide this really interesting guide through Noé's career and his inspirations, I guess. So after we see all these interviews, an incredible set piece is presented, and it's this long, lively dance number that is led by the troupe's choreographer. And basically just imagine some of the dance scenes from Suspiria of last year, only set to club music. And after this troupe does this sequence, they all high-five in celebration because they basically just had a pretty good rehearsal. So they all decide to sort of hang out in this confined area, like almost like a cabin only in the winter. And they party pretty much into the wee hours. They indulge in sangria and have frank conversations about who they're attracted to and just discuss their future in general. There's another sort of dance-off scene that's kind of full of joy and then eventually tension, because a few of the parties or a few of the attendees at the party start to feel really strange. It appears that the sangria they've all been drinking a lot of has been spiked with LSD. So it's from this point forward we kind of watch everybody have a complete breakdown, a freak out, or simply just act very impulsive to the point of harming one another. And some throw themselves into convulsions and lash out, and basically just, it's an emotional experience. The last half hour, I would say, is a trip into hell. I've told a number of people recently that some movies that kind of serve to provoke, you know, and they just want to showcase extreme behavior don't always sit well with me. I just sometimes think that some filmmakers are only out there to shock the audience without any context or a larger point. I guess unpleasant exploitation is just hard for me to endure, especially as I've gotten older. But I went into this with some trepidation since most of Irreversible is way too difficult to even sit through. But at the same time, I was also surprised that I enjoyed his follow-up Into the Void. I'm actually surprised to report that this might be one of his best films, and it's certainly his most consistent film. And it helps that the experience only lasts about 90 minutes. But like you have with other films in the past, I do have to warn people, this is a really dark, really twisted film. It starts off very joyful and really energetic, almost like a twisted, subversive Busby Berkeley dance movie, and then it essentially sort of turns into a horror film. And for me, it's really the style here, the fluidity of the cinematography that I really, really think is worth the price of admission. He kind of reminds me of De Palma or Darren Aronofsky in a way, because like his camera work is really exciting and really interesting. He does things that you don't normally see in a movie. He sort of like tips the camera, or it goes upside down, or they have really, really long takes. Like I said, the first hour is kind of subversive and energetic, and the final act is a full-out kind of extreme horror movie. And if that sounds exciting to you, and if you're familiar with this kind of filmmaking, you might walk out feeling dizzy, but in a good way, almost like being on a roller coaster. But like I said, you have to sit through a good 30 minutes of sort of stomach-churning intensity. It's a really fascinating film. The energy, the soundtrack, the dance sequences, this cast of unknowns all kind of managed to make this a pretty memorable experience. Probably, I hadn't experienced something like this probably since Suspiria. So for the more adventurous filmmaker that likes a good challenge, I'm going to recommend this one surprisingly high.
Okay. All right, so that's Climax, playing in a few theaters here in Chicago. All right, well, let's get to the big one. Jim, tell us about Captain Marvel.
Well then, okay, yeah, this is another comic book movie from the Marvel Universe, which I know we don't have enough of these, right? We don't have nearly enough of these days. But this one has something special going for it, which I'll get to, obviously. We have an Avengers prequel featuring the wonderful Brie Larson playing Carol Danvers, who at the beginning of the film is basically known as Veers. And she's a Star Force agent for the alien Kree race. Veers isn't necessarily a character from the original Captain Marvel comics, but I believe most comic book devotees will recognize her Star Force members, including the leader, Yon Rogue, here, played by Jude Law. Veers has these incredible abilities. She has super strength, physical endurance, and the ability to shoot blasts of energy from her hands and fingertips. But at the same time, she can't remember how she got these special powers or what her life was like before the Kree found her and brought her to their home world. So she has to uncover the truth behind her own origin story, essentially, which we slowly get glimpses of, especially early on. We open on a rescue mission in which the Star Force is assigned to recover a spy, and of course things go wrong when Veers ends up in the hands of the Skrulls, which is this race of shape-shifting aliens that have been they've been at war for a long time with the Kree. The Skrull leader Talos, played by Ben Mendelsohn, has one goal, and he's willing to root around in Veers' memories to essentially get this light-speed engine, which could turn the tide in the war here. So we basically go through her memory, and she sort of unlocks visions of her past as Carol Danvers. And then eventually she escapes their clutches, which leads her to crash land on planet C-53, also known as Earth, in the mid-1990s. There she comes into contact with Nick Fury, of course, played by Samuel Jackson. And their worlds collide when the aliens decide to locate Veers in hopes of destroying her and retrieving a powerful energy source that also may unlock some of her past experiences, including some buried memories that she's had, featuring a woman here, played by Annette Bening, who may play a very significant role. That's essentially the plot here.
Okay. All right, Jim. Hang on, Jim. Okay.
Okay, sure.
Right, hang on, Jim. Jim just gave us the plot and everything for Captain Marvel, and when we come back, we'll find out what Jim thought of it, and I'll tell you what I thought of it as well, but we're going to take a break right here on 720 WGN.
Backyard need a boost? Upload a photo for a chance to get decked out for summer. Win a 12 by 16 foot dream deck from Archideck of Chicagoland and TimberTech, a patio set from American Sale, and a Weber Spirit 2 Series grill. Details at WGNradio.com/contests.
All right, we'll get back to the movie reviews coming up here. And right now, though, we got to get to the newsroom. It is 1:30, and let's go to the newsroom with Vic Vaughn.
Thanks, Nick. Chicago police are questioning three men after callers in the Lincoln Park neighborhood reported seeing a person with a gun. It happened during the pre-dawn hours of Sunday morning. The first caller reported seeing the person inside a building in the 2400 block of North Clybourne. A second caller reported seeing more than one person with a gun in the same area, prompted a large police presence, including SWAT teams. All three were taken into custody. No one was injured. No charges have been announced. Ethiopian Airlines has grounded its entire fleet of Boeing 737 MAX 8 commercial airliners. China has instructed all of its airlines to ground theirs as well. Eight Americans were aboard Ethiopian Airlines flight ET-302 when it crashed Sunday morning outside Ethiopia's capital city of Bishoftu. All 157 people were killed. They were from 35 different nationalities, among them 19 United Nations staff members. Flight was on its way to Nairobi, Kenya, crashed shortly after takeoff. The airplane was one of Boeing's new 737 MAX 8 airliners. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
World-class chefs don't use bargain bin ingredients.
Likewise, Penny Mustard's world-class craftsmen use only the finest ingredients to create our sophisticated furniture.
And when we can't find the right ingredient, we scratch, claw, sweat, and persuade until we get it.
In our search for comfortable, high-density foam, we discovered it didn't exist in the sizes we needed.
Sure, we found tons of low-grade foam because most companies look for ways to make their furniture cheaper.
But we find ways to make it better.
Ben convinced a foam manufacturer to fabricate what Penny Mustard needed from their specialty lots of high-density foam.
I can be very persuasive.
Foam's a tricky little stinker because you can't tell if it's good just by looking at it or by sitting on it.
Cheap foam grows saggy, lumpy, and eventually bottoms out.
But Penny Mustard proudly uses the highest density foam in the industry.
So your sofa, chair, and mattress will last and last and last.
Watch the foam comparison video at PennyMustard.com.
Penny Mustard Furniture.
Better versions of the foam people want.
Catchy tune? Sure. But I'm Steve Cochran, and there's a place where old cars give new hope without a clever jingle. The American Lung Association has real stories about real people. Like Diane Clark, who was diagnosed with scleroderma, an autoimmune disease that caused lung disease. This led to a double lung transplant in 2015. Thanks to her new lungs, Diane can now help others by raising awareness and money for lung disease research. Real stories, not jingles. Donate your old car to help people like Diane. 800-LUNG-CARS or visit lungcars.org.
WGN Sports, Blackhawks host Arizona later tonight. Your pregame with Chris Bowden begins at 7. John and Troy have the call at 7:30 on 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. Spring training baseball, the A's beat the White Sox 7-6. Sox play the Brewers today. Brewers rallied Sunday to beat the Cubs 7-5. The Cubs are off today. They'll play the Reds on Tuesday. Pistons beat the Bulls 131-108. WGN traffic, your expressways, tollways are moving along at posted speeds. The Kennedy express lanes on the outbound side are closed from Ontario to Montrose, so those express lanes will remain either closed or pointed inbound until 5 a.m. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center for the rest of these pre-dawn hours, clear skies and breezy, otherwise mostly sunny today, gusty winds, highs near 40. Tuesday, sunshine, highs in the mid-40s. Right now, fair skies and 29 at O'Hare. It's 31 at Chicago's lakefront. I'm Vic Vaughn in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and these are the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're going to get a visit from Eric Childress, who is in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and we're going to get some exclusive reviews of the stuff that he's seeing while he's there in Austin. Right now, though, Jim Laskowski is joining me to talk about the new movies to review, and Jim and I are going to give you our thoughts on Captain Marvel. Before the break, Jim told you the plot of Captain Marvel. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's continue. Captain Marvel. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, yeah. So in the past, I've often said that you know, I'm not the biggest comic book guy in the world. I don't know. I haven't read a lot of comic books in the past. But at the same time, every once in a while, a comic book movie will really resonate with me strongly, something like Spider-Man 2 or Superman 2 or the first Avengers movie. All those are really high up in my mind. Also, of course, Logan. Just movies that sort of come out of nowhere and really surprise you. Captain Marvel here comes from the directing team of Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who have pretty much just known for making independent films like Half Nelson and a really incredibly underrated gambling movie called Mississippi Grind, which I know you're a fan of as well.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Also featuring Ben Mendelsohn, of course. But so I walked in this with a little skepticism just because this is not their genre of choice, but overall, I think they did a serviceable job. I would say that there aren't many surprises, but this is a really great cast who is clearly having a good time. I mean, there's some moments, though, where I think they downplay some pretty big reveals where I think a little bit of emotional weight probably would have made the film even stronger. There's no doubt that the main reason why I would pay money to see this movie in particular is because I get to watch one of my favorite actresses working today kick some alien butt. you know, and Brie Larson has always had a great screen presence, you know, ever since Short Term 12 is really the movie that sort of signaled to me that she's, you know, an incredible actress. And I think she does a fairly good job here. And her scenes shared with Samuel Jackson are really like almost like a buddy cop movie, and you know, which is kind of apt in that this takes place in the mid-90s. I think the setup is a little long, a little shaky. You sort of have to get your bearings together a little bit. But once she crashes into the Blockbuster Video, I managed to have a pretty good time. There's an adorable orange cat, of course, named Goose, who surprisingly becomes an interesting part of the story late in the film. And there's obviously going to be a lot of 90s references and jokes like dial-up modems or how long it takes to play a CD in a 90s era computer. But of course, the soundtrack is a delight. And, you know, I do realize that a lot of my enjoyment may have come from 90s nostalgia and the cat and sort of the interplay between Jackson and Brie Larson. But at the same time, I will admit, I wasn't as emotionally involved as I had hoped. Granted, I'm kind of, like I mentioned at the top, burnt out on comic book movies. But at the same time, this does distinguish itself a little bit because it is a little bit, not entirely, about female empowerment, especially late in the film once certain things are revealed. Again, I think Brie Larson does her best and brings this character to life. And, you know, this is an origin story that I think a lot of people will find a lot to love, and clearly they're going to see it in droves, which is great. So I'm definitely giving this one a thumbs up, but I also wish, I think, you know, in light of recent comic book movies like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or Black Panther, it doesn't reach those heights for me personally. So overall, I think it's good, but not great, and I'm going to recommend it.
Okay, yeah, I liked it too. I thought it was really good. The main reason why I liked it as much as I did is because of Brie Larson. She's great,
for sure.
I mean, I love her, and she really commands the screen in this movie. I think she's terrific, and I think it's great casting, and she's really, I think she's obviously, I think, the best thing in the movie, and she carries it. The stuff between her and Samuel Jackson is great, and I love that. Everybody knows who's seen all these Marvel films that Nick Fury has an eye patch, and the origin behind why he has that eye patch really cracked me up. And a lot of that stuff, and I'm a sucker for all the '90s references too. When the final credits come up and a whole song is playing, that makes me happy.
And a great whole song.
Amazing. These plots sometimes in these comic book movies can be interchangeable, and that's certainly the case here. Sometimes I was just like, I don't even know what's happening. Power source thing, I don't know, but I like the Fonzie lunchbox. I thought that was funny. Some of the special effects are really good, and there is a real. There's a real sense of joy that I think that Brie Larson is having with this role. She's clearly having a great time here, and that is that you can see that in every part of the movie. It was nice to see Ben Mendelsohn. You know, like he shows up and you think he's a villain, and then maybe he's not. And then Jude Law has some interesting stuff in it too. But it's not like this isn't treading anything new. This is stuff that we've seen a million times before, and there's really sort of nothing new in the movie except that it is well made. I think the effects are really good, and you've got a great lead, and that was kind of enough for me, and so I had a good time. I enjoyed it, and the cat is amazing. The cat is just the Goose. The cat, essentially steals a lot of the movie, and is like one of my favorite parts of the entire movie. And there's a wonderful, because you see the cat, and he's all, he's cute and he's orange and everything, and then all of a sudden, like, something happens pretty late in the movie where the cat has a whole different. There's just something happens with the cat where you just go, what? And it works, and it's great, and so. The audience I saw it with, they seemed to really love it. There was applause at the end of the movie. There's also a really sweet moment at the beginning of the film where they pay tribute to Stan Lee. That got applause. People were like, yeah, Stan, at the beginning of the movie, because they do like this lovely little tribute to Stan Lee at the beginning. And by the way, I would wager to say that Kevin Smith is probably going to lose his mind, or he probably had lost his mind when he saw Stan Lee's cameo in this movie.
I heard that it brought him to tears.
I'm not surprised. So. I mean, the cameo that it's a personal, like, sort of lovely tribute to you know, to Kevin Smith, and so anyway, I found it to be entertaining, and you know, the, I mean, again, it's, you know, it's, there's nothing new here really, but I gotta say, Brie Larson, man, I just think she's really great, and she's perfectly cast in this movie and does a great job, and you can tell she's having the time of her life. And that, you know, you can feel it in the movie too. So I think she's great.
Yeah.
I like the movie. I didn't think it was a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but she's great. And so I'm recommending Captain Marvel. So there you go. What do we got?
I'll watch Brie Larson in just about anything. And you know, at the same time, it's like part of me is conflicted because of, like, I just want to watch her do, you know, the kind of work that she does in Short Term 12, and that's the same kind of goes for like Elizabeth Olsen or Scarlett Johansson, but I think they do a great job in these movies, even if, you know, the movies themselves aren't mind blowing or original. You know,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, she clearly, I mean, she's just, you know, a real special talent, and I love watching her. So, all right. Well, there we go. Those are that's the big movie this week. Next week, I guess Wonder Park is the animated movie Wonder Park, I think, is the big one that comes out next week.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting Julianne Moore movie coming out called Gloria Bell that I'm hearing good buzz about. So that should be interesting.
Always good stuff. And then Captive State, which is another sort of a sci-fi horror movie, that'll be coming out next week too. So we'll talk all about that as well. Jim, thanks so much, man.
Okay, absolutely, man.
All right,
talk to you later.
See you later. There you go. Jim Leskowski, he'll join us next week to review all the new movies. And we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we'll get a live report from Eric Childress, who's in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. We're going to get exclusive reviews of some of the movies that he's seen while he's been in Austin. So we'll do that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Got a bunch of fun food topics to talk about, and we are going to get to some of those offbeat holidays that you can celebrate for the month of March. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to call us or text us. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and also Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Eric Childress joins us every Monday morning along with Jim Leskowski, and we review the new movies. Well, Eric also goes to a lot of film festivals, of course, across the year, and he gives us live reports, exclusive reports and reviews of the new movies that he's seen. And right now he is in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And so Eric's going to give us an exclusive look at some of the movies he's seen while he's there. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah. All right. How long have you been in at the South by Southwest Film Festival?
Since Friday afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many movies have you seen in that time?
Well, this number might actually shock you.
Okay.
But I've seen 9 movies.
9?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. it's only logistically possible to see 3 on Friday after the festival starts, so that was normal. But on Saturday, I actually got shut out of 2 movies. One, I got shut out of the Beach Bum, the new Matthew McConaughey film that Harmony Korine did.
Oh.
Yeah. Because apparently everybody in the cast was there with an entourage of like 27.
Yeah.
So a spot in line that normally should have gotten me in Literally, they stopped the line with five people in front of me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and so I couldn't get in.
Oh.
And then the movie that was after that didn't start for started a half hour late, and that prevented me from seeing a midnight movie last night. So I lost two movies yesterday because of scheduling and entourages.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about what you did see. Wherever you want to start, let's start. By the way, did you expect Captain Marvel to make $153 million?
Well, I think I said on the show last week, I think I said somewhere in the 140 region.
Yeah. I mean, that's really amazing.
It's a very strong number.
Yeah, that's a huge number. And it was packed when we saw it on Saturday. I mean, packed.
Okay.
So, that's really amazing. Those are really amazing numbers. Okay. Well, anyway, wherever you want to start, let's go.
Well, Nick, we have to talk about Us.
Okay. It's Jordan Peele's new movie.
The Jordan Peele's movie, of course, is what I'm referring to. It was the opening night film here at South by Southwest. Clearly, you know, the hype on this thing could not be any higher, given that it would be a success in Get Out. Jordan Peele wins an Oscar, and now this is such an eagerly anticipated follow-up. And the short answer on how good it is, I have a feeling that very shortly, this is going to be hailed as a horror masterpiece.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, Get Out, I thought Get Out was a strong film, really well made, great debut, but this one goes to a whole new level for him as a director, specifically. I mean, Get Out was a movie that was very much in the screenplay. You know, its ideas, its themes resonated, beyond, the kind of the references and the influences that he's, are clearly, steeped within that film. And Us is certainly steeped in so many references and things that you'll just have fun just counting influences throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a lot of fun. But this thing is just such a major leap forward, I think, for him as a director, because not only does this film have all of those ideas, and I think then some, that Get Out did, but just as a visceral experience, this is top-notch horror filmmaking. I mean, you take like the last 20 minutes of Get Out and extrapolate that to about 90 minutes.
Mm.
Because when this thing gets going, when this thing finally kind of reveals itself, and it takes a bit, to get to that moment where the doppelgangers appear, it is non-stop. And the way he shoots the horror sequences, suspense sequences, the way it's edited, the way that things are just pieced together in the screenplay, where just so many things are just referenced throughout that's going to have you thinking about the entire movie just over and over again, just little beats, character beats, and I even referenced Back to the Future at one point. That's something I didn't even catch. Someone in another review caught that I thought was pretty fascinating, that adds a whole other level to the film. This is really going to blow people away. And for all of us that were touting Toni Collette and Hereditary last year as the piece de resistance of horror actress leads, Lupita Nyong'o deserves every bit of praise that Toni Collette got last year.
Mm.
Yeah, and if we're going to be hyping, we hyped Toni Collette for an Oscar last year, we have to be doing the same for her, because it is an extraordinary performance.
Wow. Yeah, obviously I'm very excited about this movie, and the trailers are great and everything I hear, and I'm very happy to hear, that you liked it as much as you did. And the response from the audience, I would imagine, was pretty high.
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah, the reviews are incredibly strong for this thing. People who, we were talking about like how Get Out is, kind of like an accessible horror film in a way. This one, not that it's not accessible, but it is much more visceral and violent than Get Out was. Like I said, there's quite a bit of violence in here. but the kind of violence that, you know, guys like you and I very much enjoy in films like this. You know, movies that where you feel the violence, but at the same time, kind of fun, too. So it's like all these things going on in this movie. Jordan Peele is just, I mean, it is amazing what this guy has done with two movies now.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was sold even before you reviewed it. So okay, that's Us, and it does open in a couple of weeks here. It'll be opening on the 22nd of mm-hmm. March. So a couple of weeks, and then everybody will get to see Us, Jordan Peele's new follow up to Get Out. Excited! I can't wait to see it. Cannot wait to see it. Okay. All right. We're talking to Eric Childress here, who's in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And what else do you want to jump into?
Well, let me talk about a film that the last movie I just saw just premiered a few hours ago. It is the directorial debut of Olivia Wilde.
Oh, okay.
And it's a film called Booksmart. And it's a teenage high school film set on the last day of high school before graduation for a group of seniors. Starred as Beanie Feldstein, who was in Neighbors 2, and Caitlin Dever from Short Term 12. They play best friends who are have been, you know, dedicated their entire life to being the best in high school, so much so they've kind of missed out on all of the fun stuff. And when they realize that so many of the people in their student body that have seemingly have slacked off all this time, or have actually gotten themselves into really good school, and so they've managed to study and have fun at the same time, they set out on this one final night to have as much fun as they possibly can and seek the biggest party in town before they, you know, go off on their separate ways for the summer. So, you know, in many ways, you know, the easy description of the movie is going to be, you know, super bad with female leads. That you're going to hear a lot about that. But at the same time, I think, you know, especially the first half of the movie is their friendship is established, and, you know, we really get a, you know, sense of who these girls are. You're going to hear, you know, a lot of people use titles like Mean Girls and Clueless and Edge of 17 even. And it feels like the kind of movie that the older generations grew up with in the 80s. It feels like that kind of high school movie, but at the same time, it feels like something modern that is going to be kind of put into rotation for young girls and the generations after them for some time. It really kind of has that feel to it that we're kind of looking at the potential of sort of a new classic for a new generation. I think the movie's good. I think, you know, some of those other titles that I mentioned are a bit better. They're a little bit more well-rounded. I think the energy loses a little bit of luster in the second half of this movie. But the two leads, Feldstein and Endeavor, are naturals. And their friendship is established in the very first scene. And we never doubt a moment of their relationship for the entire film. And it's the thing that really carries this thing. Well, at times being very funny and at times incredibly raunchy, Jason Sudeikis has a role, appears in the film, as does Will Forte and Lisa Kudrow as two of the parents of one of the girls. So some really funny stuff in here. I think the first half's a little bit better than the second half, but I think that young women are really going to have something that they're going to be able to pass down the way that a lot of people pass down John Hughes movies and Mean Girls and Clueless and things like that over the years. So this is a real nice surprise.
Nice. Very cool. Okay, that's called Booksmart. All right. Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Eric Childress is giving us a live report from Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Film Festival, giving us some exclusive looks at some of the movies that he's seen while he's been there. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more reviews from South by Southwest with Eric Childress right after this on 720 WGN. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time, and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk or text, and we reviewed the new movies. We just had Captain Marvel was the only really big movie, and Jim and I both gave it a positive review. And now Eric Childress is with us, and he is in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and we're getting some exclusive looks at some of the movies that he's seen while he's been there. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Wherever you want to go with the next movie for South by Southwest, let's do it.
Okay. Also the big Friday night premiere at the festival. Saturday night, the big premiere was Long Shot. This is the film with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's coming out May 3rd. Charlize Theron plays Secretary of State, who finds out that the president is going to be stepping down. So she's looking to do this big environmental campaign as sort of a springboard for her launch for presidential bid in 2020. Seth Rogen plays a kind of a social justice journalist who quits when a big media conglomerate with a kind of Republican bent usurps his online entity. But there's a connection between the two of them because Charlize Theron actually used to babysit Seth Rogen. He had a big crush on her when he was 13 and she was 16. And they reconnect at a party. They're looking to sort of rebuild her image in the public mind, a bit. And, she realizes that he, kind of knows her and she likes his writing. So she ends up hiring him, to be a punch-up writer on a number of her speeches. So they end up, kind of re-getting to know each other to work on these writings. And as, time passes, a relationship forms between the two of them. In kind of classic rom-com fashion, the powers that be don't really want them to be together, but their chemistry is kind of undeniable. Just to go back to what I just said, in kind of classic rom-com fashion, this is a movie steeped in those very traditions, but is in many of them the ones that might not rise to the level of greatness. But certainly the level of goodness, it's usually because of the chemistry of the two stars. And Theron and Rogen absolutely have it in this movie, even though it does seem like an odd pairing. The comedy is really strong in this movie. I know you're not a big Rogen fan, but I am. And I think the movie is very consistently funny. Theron, getting to do comedy chops, which he doesn't often get to do. It is really nice to see, and truly, there are scenes together where there's real, genuine feeling going on between the two of them. It doesn't feel like just some random kind of thing that they're just thrown together because they have to be, and we're gonna make jokes at the expense of one of the most beautiful women on the planet, one of the most kind of slackery dudes on the planet getting together. It doesn't feel like that. There's warmth here. There's real genuineness between the two of them. And like I said, the movie's also incredibly funny at times, really funny. There's a few things are going to set Twitter on fire as far as the whole male-female power dynamic a bit. But I think that if they just sort of give themselves over to it and just allow themselves to laugh and love, I think they're going to find this is a really sweet movie.
Okay, all right, that's Long Shot, and Jonathan Levine directed it, and
right,
who did 50-50 and, mm-hmm. and some other, and is obviously
the night before,
right? So I mean, obviously worked with Rogen several times.
Yes. So. Yes.
All right, cool. That's Long Shot, and it comes out in May.
Okay.
All right. What's next?
Here's another one that I saw just last evening. This is actually going to be premiering on Netflix in a couple of weeks, and it's called The Highwaymen. Have you heard of this one?
Remind me.
Okay, it is Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson playing the two the Texas Rangers who were tasked to hunt down Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So that's the plot of the movie. Like, they are, we follow, instead of following Bonnie and Clyde, we follow these two guys who, but following their trail, they're old war buddies, and just seeing them, follow the clues and trying to, to stop what is essentially a murderous rampage. While at the same time being kind of folk heroes to people who believe that they were stealing from the banks and, kind of sticking to the man in a way. And that's what I was hoping this movie was going to be more about. When I saw this movie was announced, there were a lot of people talking about it. It's like, oh, we're going to take one of the most iconic, movies of all time and kind of put the spin on it that they weren't folk heroes and they weren't, people seem to forget that they murdered a lot of people. And yes, Bonnie and Clyde is, a masterpiece and everything, but the actual, Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker were not good people, overall. They just weren't.
Right.
So I was kind of interested to see, what this movie was going to sort of remind people of that. And certainly, when you do see Bonnie and Clyde, it's less of them doing the robbing stuff and more of them doing the murdering stuff. So that's the impression you get. But the other impression that I got during the movie was really kind of a case of boredom. This John Lee Hancock directed this movie. He's done a couple good things. I mean, I think he wrote A Perfect World, worked with Costner, which was in Clint Eastwood back in the day. And he did The Rookie, obviously, but also did The Blind Side and The Alamo. So he's got kind of a spotty track record. And this movie, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes long, and as cool as it is to see Costner and Harrelson on screen together and have, the rapport that they do, Harrelson is, kind of gets to, be comic relief a bit throughout, it never really amounted to anything for me. I kept finding myself nodding out of the picture, just kind of waiting for something, some sort of greater meaning to why, this project had to be hatched in the way it was. I don't think that the attempts to sort of, kind of a way of the commentary on the violence that was going on, not just from the the authorities, but from, the criminals themselves, as kind of an interesting potential for a commentary on that the film Bonnie and Clyde itself and the violence that, sparked so much uproar back then. And it never really gets to that point either. So it's just kind of a 2 hour wait to get to, the moment that everyone's waiting for is when Bonnie and Clyde get blown away, which is, incredibly violent and visceral in the same way that the original film was. And the way Hancock almost kind of recreates it in a way, including the editing, I thought it was just like you have to find a way to separate yourself from that original movie if you really wanted this to have any kind of final impact, because by the end, all I wanted to do was watch Bonnie and Clyde again.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's called The Highwaymen, and it'll be on at the end of March on Netflix. It'll premiere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a little disappointing right there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what's next?
Okay, here's one that hasn't been picked up yet, so I'm not sure exactly when this one's going to come out, but it's a movie called Pink Wall, and it stars Tatiana Maslany and Jay Duplass, and it's a relationship story. This movie describes itself, told in six different scenes throughout their relationship. So it's kind of like almost like a 500 Days of Summer kind of feel to it, as it kind of goes back and forth through their relationship. The night they met. The fights that they've had, and other things that happened, just basically six scenes throughout the relationship. And, it's one of these, happy and sad movies where you get to see the formation, of love, the the way that they're the knife that they meet is spread out throughout the film is really quite beautiful, as you kind of realize just the level of intimacy that they had on that first night without actually going to bed with one another. It's something that we don't see often in movies, but also realizing that we are kind of seeing the deterioration of this relationship and whether or not it can be solved after, you know, the 5-6 years that they've been together. The movie was directed by Tom Cullen, an actor. There was a movie here with Maslany and Cullen a few years ago called The Other Half that I talked about in the show a few years ago.
Yeah.
That he played at the Chicago Critics Film Festival. And Tom Cullen, he's one of the actors in the movie Weekend, Andrew Hague's movie from some years ago that people really love. And he got a real, you know, a real sort of, you know, grasp. The movie was shot in like 9 days. It was supposed to be shot in 10 days, but they lost one day to a storm in the UK. So the movie was shot in 9 days with these actors. Duplass, I mean, Maslany is a force.
Yeah,
you know, she just, I mean, we've said this many times about her, and she's just so fierce and watchable. And Duplass makes a really great foil for her. The two of them are really terrific together. It's a movie that, you know, eventually when people, you know, see it, they'll realize, you know, the level of talent that is really behind here. It's a familiar story. We've seen, you know, movies like this before. But this one had a really, really terrific emotional power, and, you know, thanks to the two leads, in particular. So Pink Wall, it was a film that I really liked.
Okay. And it hasn't been picked up yet.
Not yet.
Okay, but it will probably.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So that's Pink Wall. We'll look for that one coming out. All right, Eric, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric Childress is going to hang out with us. We'll get a few more thoughts on some of the movies that he's seen. He's at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas right now, and we're getting some exclusive looks at some of the movies that he's seen while he's been at the fest. And we'll get more of that coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Watch for Chicago's own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Battier and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. And, we've got some fun food topics we're going to get to. We're also going to talk about some offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And right now we're talking with Eric Childress. Eric joins us every Monday morning to review the new movies, and he goes to a lot of film festivals during the course of the year. And he is currently in Austin, Texas at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and he's given us some exclusive looks at some of the movies that he's seen while he's been there. And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, so where do you want to go next?
Okay, well, I got two more for you.
All right.
So one of them is a movie called Yes, God, Yes. And it stars Natalia Dyer, who plays the sister on Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
And she plays a high school student in kind of a very extreme Catholic school and upbringing. And she ends up going on this Catholic retreat. Basically, you know, just all her classmates go off to, like, this camp. They all get kind of sequestered away, and they talk about their feelings. They talk about God. They talk about the horrors of sexuality, which is really what this movie is ultimately about. It's set in basically the early days of the internet and AOL, so chat rooms and dial-up is still a thing, and that she just is kind of discovering the extremes, if you will, of sexuality on the internet. And is kind of going against all of the teachings that she's had in school. The movie is sort of this kind of slow burn about the sexual feelings that are welling up inside of her, and then kind of breaking, you know, past the hypocrisy that's being taught to her by the priests and the counselors, who are all, you know, kind of just basically giant horn dogs waiting to happen to begin with. And I was really hoping that this movie was going to be something greater than that. You know, having mentioned Booksmart earlier, which is, you know, Caitlin Devon actually plays an outed gay teenager in the film. That is a film that is much more in tune with real personal sexuality than this film is. And having actually personally attended one of these Catholic retreats in my own upbringing, I was just really kind of really disappointed that the movie didn't have anything more to offer than the pretty basic stuff that that I experienced myself. Even with the female slant on it, I thought that ideas about sexuality would never really went beyond the real basics, 101 stuff that we have seen in countless movies and TV shows over the years. So I was really disappointed that it just never kind of rose above and became the kind of the movie about sexual hypocrisy that it clearly wants to be.
I'm looking at the writer director's credits. She wrote Obvious Child, which was a movie that I really.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, which is a movie that I really loved.
Yeah, that's a terrific movie.
Yeah. So yes, God, yes. Not so much. Okay, we got one more, right?
Yeah, one more. Another one that I saw just last night, and I'm going to talk about it with you, even though I'm not quite sure where I'm falling on this film just yet.
Okay.
But I mention it because I just want to see people's reaction when they see it.
Okay.
And it's a movie called The Art of Self-Defense, and it stars Jesse Eisenberg as a, you know, a very kind of meek guy, just kind of going about his business, who one day, on his way to get dog food at night, is assaulted by a group of people on motorcycles. Puts him in the hospital for several days, and when he gets out, he's, you know, incredibly scared. He's, you know, he thinks about buying a gun, but then comes across a karate dojo that is headed by a man who just calls himself Sensei, played by Alessandra Nivola, and he begins taking the class. He becomes a white belt. Everyone else in the class is a black belt. He goes about his days learning the teachings of the sensei and kind of adopting his philosophies. And it kind of adopts them in a way that where you see how kind of a meek or scared person can be co-opted into a kind of a toxic masculinity, or masculine state. So as we see the evolution of this character throughout the movie, we actually kind of see him, while being a more confident person, becoming kind of a much worse person at that. And again, I don't want to talk about where this film eventually goes, but it was written and directed by Riley Stearns, who did a movie years ago called Faults with Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mm.
Did you see that movie?
It
was
no.
Where she was in a cult, and she was basically kidnapped by a guy played by Leland Orser, who was specialized in deprogramming cult members. So it's basically this sort of this one act or this one set play of the two of them in a hotel room, him trying to get to the core of her normalcy. And it's a really strong film, really, you know, really dark film. This one, for much of the time, it feels like, and you know, I thought about this instantly, and it's been reiterated by, you know, at least one of my colleagues. It feels very much like a Jared Hess movie.
Mm.
You know, and yeah, that's exactly the reaction. Even as a Napoleon Dynamite guy that I am, I haven't really liked much of his other movies. But then at times there are elements where it kind of becomes a Jody Hill movie. And there's kind of elements of Observer Report to witness throughout this movie, which is obviously a much better film than a Jared Hess film.
Right.
Yeah. And again, I just want to see people's reaction to where this movie eventually ends up, how nutty it gets. It's very funny at times. Some other times it goes on way too long, particularly in the first half of the movie. There are just some scenes in the dojo that kind of just kind of wear out the welcome a little bit, but then it kind of takes a turn about half, a little more, almost two-thirds through the way, and goes into a completely different area. And I just want to watch the audience the other way, seeing where this thing ends up going, because at the end I was laughing pretty hard at some of the stuff and got what he was going for. I don't know if he was completely successful with it, but I'm willing to give the film another look and maybe another look after that to see exactly where I'm going to stand on this thing. But it's called The Art of Self-Defense, and it's coming out in June.
Okay. The Art of Self-Defense. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. How many more days are you going to be there, Eric?
I'm going to be here Monday and Tuesday. I'm going to be here today and Tuesday. And so we got a few more premieres, including the movie Good Boys, which is Jacob Tremblay and, like, basically super bad for sixth graders.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. And a few other things that look pretty interesting. So I'm hoping that there'll be a couple surprises in there to tell you about next week.
Yeah, all right. So we'll have a bunch of more reviews coming up next week. And real quickly, though, you were not crazy about Captain Marvel.
No, I was completely underwhelmed by Captain Marvel. I thought that it didn't really work as as an action film. I thought that they didn't do a great job at really developing the backstory of the character and the way that they kind of thrust us into the alien world first, and then by the time you start to realize the backstory, it just didn't feel like there was any sense of surprise, or there's a whole bunch of stuff that just seems missing from the movie, and it never really got me on board emotionally. It never really got me on board really caring about this character. The whole Enterprise to me felt like a necessity just to get to the next Avengers movie, a piece that was missing. And we had to fill in the blanks. Mm. That's what it felt like to me.
Okay, I liked it more. I liked it more than you did. And the reason why mostly is because of Brie Larson. I just think she's great,
mm-hmm.
and I think she's terrific in the movie. And she seems to be having a really, really good time. So, all right. Well, next week we've got what do we got next week?
Wonder Park.
Oh, Wonder Park, right.
And 5 Feet Apart with Haley Richardson.
Oh, right.
And yeah, big teenager movie.
There you go. All right, so we got those to review next week, and then you'll wrap up your Austin reviews as well.
Certainly will.
Okay, buddy. All right, have fun while you're there, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, Eric Childress, everybody. Exclusive reports from the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas, and he'll next week when we review the new movies, we'll also set aside some time so that he can do some wrap-up here with some of the other movies that he's going to see between now and Tuesday night. All right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And much more. We got some other food-related topics we're going to get to in a little bit. But on Friday, I was going to tell you about all these sort of offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March. But we got a little distracted because we started talking about Vic's hatred of his middle name, which is Eugene, and that got us off into a whole nother tangent. But we still have a bunch of these offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March. I'll talk about them right now. So there you go. Hey, nice choice with the Duran Duran, my friend.
Hey, you know, they're one of the best of the 80s.
I love those guys. Love those guys. I'll tell you what. I've seen You know, I've seen Metallica, I've seen Black Sabbath, I've seen, you know, Anthrax.
Those are like the holy grails of metal.
Yeah, and Duran Duran was the loudest concert I've ever been to. The loudest concert I've ever been to.
Seriously?
Yeah, this was in the mid-80s, so like when they were at the top of their game at that time, the top of their popularity, and my friends and I went, and it was at the Rosemont Horizon, or the Allstate Arena, whatever you want to call it. It was Rosemont Horizon then. And it was the loudest show I've ever seen because there was nonstop screaming from the girls in the audience. It was just like one long scream. Thousands of girls just screaming at the top of their voices. And since there was so much, you know, screaming going on in the audience, that they had to crank up the music even louder. I mean, it was ridiculously loud. It was unbelievable. So in order to hear the music over the constant screaming, they had to crank up the music. So as a result, the music itself was insanely loud, and all of the girls just screaming at the top of their lungs for 2 hours.
It's like the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show.
It was exactly what it was like. It was like that. It was just ridiculously loud.
Can't even hear the music, really.
No. It was nuts. It was nuts. It was a great show, but
sure.
Just, my God. When we got out of there, it was like, oh, my God, I had a headache. I remember when we were like, because they didn't stop screaming. Like, the girls did not stop screaming the entire show. And then they had, like, you know, they had, like, a video screen up on the stage. And whenever they would cut to different members of the band, the screaming either got louder. It's like they really were, I mean, the girls would really scream at John Taylor. Anytime John Taylor would show up on the screen, they would, you know, and it would vary, like, who got the biggest screams. But yeah, that was the loudest show I've ever seen in my life, was Duran Duran. I mean, it's crazy.
I still have trouble going to concerts because I'm just like, I want to be there for the music, but it's just so loud.
Well, yeah. I mean, my issue now is I'm too old for everything now is a festival. Like, you know what I mean? There's not, it's like, if you want to see, because I really, you know, I enjoy going to certain bands and seeing them.
Right, right.
But I don't want to sit through, you know, 12 other bands. I'm too old for that kind of crap, too. And just to see, like, a band I really want to see play for 40 minutes. The whole festival thing is just that's not at all my scene.
I did Lollapalooza once, and I was like, all right, that's good. I saw who I wanted to see, and that was it.
Yeah.
Never really felt like going back.
I can't imagine going to Lollapalooza.
It's a nightmare.
I can't even imagine. It's August, you know, it's like 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
No, I can't even, that just sounds like a nightmare to me. I mean, I went to Lollapalooza years ago, before it was like a 3-day fest, when Lollapalooza first started, it was just a festival that toured the country. And so I saw three or four Lollapaloozas back in the 90s. I went to the first one and 91, and then went to like three more when it was just like sort of a touring festival.
Just Perry Farrell taking his friends on the road.
Yeah,
sort
yeah.
Of deal.
I mean, I want to say it was 91 or 92. It was just a ridiculous lineup. Like Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. It was like right at the height of that.
Yeah, peak of the like 90s alternative.
Yeah. And it was a great, and it was also, they used to also have Jim Rose Circus Sideshow. Are you familiar with Jim Rose?
No.
Oh, man.
I'm going to get an education.
You should you should look some of this stuff up on YouTube. Jim Rose's Circus Sideshow. The acts were ridiculous. There was Mr. Lifto, where he would lift things up with his genitals, which were pierced. And then there was, I can't remember what the stomach guy. I can't remember what Mr. Stomach or whatever the hell his name was, but basically he would stick a tube down his throat and pour a bunch of nasty liquid directly into his stomach, and then he would regurgitate it, bring it back out, and then invite people on stage to drink it.
Oh, my
And Eddie Vedder drank it. I remember Vedder came up on stage.
I'm not surprised.
And he drank it. But surprised. So that's Jim Rose's the sideshow. That was always part of a part of Lollapalooza. But yeah. So I don't know if they're still around, if they have more, you know, if Jim Rose still tours, but it was complete insanity.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at a video of a guy putting a nail into his nose.
There you go. That's about the size of it.
Geez.
That's about the size of it. That's yeah. So that was part of the Lollapalooza, you know, show. I think the Jim Rose was like 3 years straight. They came out and they would do it. Look, it was like one of the side stages, I think.
Yeah.
And then they would come out on stage and do the big ridiculous stuff.
That's entertainment in the 90s.
Yeah. So yeah, Lollapalooza. And I don't know how wouldn't the decision to actually make Chicago the host of Lollapalooza. I wonder how that came to be. But I mean, it's you know, tons of people come to the city. You know,
it's insane.
It's nuts. I just remember when they it was 7 years ago when they had that insane thunderstorm.
Yeah, was it 2012? Because that was the one I was at. That was the summer of 2012.
It was. I don't know. I can't remember exactly, but I just remember. I was. Well, not here. We were in the Trib building at that time. But I was at work, and I had a Saturday. At that time, I had a Saturday evening show, so I was here, and it got. I mean, it got pitch black outside, and I remember there used to be a you could actually step outside one of the hallways down from the office. You could actually open up the door and it led out to, you know, the Trib building. We were on the seventh floor in the Trib building and it led out to like a little balcony. And so, I remember when the storm started and because they evacuated.
Yeah.
Lollapalooza. They said, you guys get out of here. People ended up in going to like Miller's Pub or any, you know, a bunch of bars in the area to stay out of the storm. And so I went over. I just wanted to see what it was like outside. So I went by the door where the balcony was, and I couldn't even open it because of the wind. I couldn't even open the door because of the wind and the water and everything was just pouring underneath the door. And I finally got the door open. It was ridiculous. Like, I mean, I can't even imagine. But I just remember that they, you know, that's when they, you know, evacuated everything, and it made the news and all that stuff. Yeah. I think they evacuated Lollapalooza a few times.
Yeah, the year I went, they evacuated, and me and my friends huddled outside of a Dunkin' Donuts preparing for the Mad Max Fury Road apocalypse that was sure to come.
Yeah. No, it seems crazy, and it seems like there's always some sort of every year. At Lollapalooza, it seems like there has been sort of consistently some weird weather stuff.
Yeah,
that's happened.
It's just a bad time of year for it, really.
Yeah. So, and that's always the same. You know, it's funny because Lollapalooza is always the same weekend as on my flashback weekend horror convention. It's the first weekend in August. That's when, you know, the flashback horror convention is every year. And so, I mean, the weather was good last year. I remember because we have at the flashback horror conventions each night on because it's Friday through Sunday the convention is, and each night the Friday night and the Saturday night we screen an outdoor movie, and so we're always kind of concerned about the weather, obviously, because if we're going to sit outside and watch a movie, we want pretty good weather. We had good weather last year for the event, but it's always, you know. You never know. You never know what kind of weather you're going to get. But anyway, so that's going to be in August, first weekend in August. We have a pretty incredible lineup. Robert Englund is going to be there again. He's been at the convention a bunch of times. He was one of the first guys that really, came to Flashback, and he comes back all the time. And obviously, people love him because he's Freddy. Bruce Campbell is going to be there this year. Sam Raimi, which is a big get.
That is huge.
Yeah. Sam Raimi is going to be there. Ted Raimi is going to be there. Ted's been there a bunch of times. Bruce Campbell was actually the guest at the very first Flashback convention in 2002. And he was, that was before they screened it. It was the very first time Bubba Hotep was screened, was at our Flashback convention. That was back in 2002. And we had the world premiere of Bubba Hotep.
It's massive.
And he came for that. And he's come a bunch of times to Flashback. We got a lot of really other Tony Todd from Candyman is going to be there. Virginia Madsen, who was also in Candyman. I'm just more excited because I'm bringing my Sideways poster and I'm going to have her sign that because it's one of my favorite movies of all time. But I love Virginia Madsen. She's awesome. And there's a lot more, too. And they'll continue to. Lance Hendrickson is going to be there.
Bishop?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
This will be like his fifth time.
Ah, he's the best.
He's amazing, man. He's also a really cool guy. I mean, he's in Near Dark. He's in Near Dark, for God's sake, which is one of the greatest movies ever made. But no, he's a very, very cool guy. So it's going to be a lot of fun. That'll be the first weekend in August, and we'll give you updates and stuff like that. And we'll have guests on from Flashback as we do every year. It's always a good time. It is. It's a good time. I always look forward to that weekend. It's always a blast. So anyway, it's things you can offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March. So tomorrow is a good one. Tomorrow is National Alfred Hitchcock Day.
All right, I got to break out the box set now.
See, I think personally, every day should be National Alfred Hitchcock Day. That should just be a thing. But it says nobody's particularly sure why March 12th is Alfred Hitchcock Day. It's neither the Master of Suspense's birthday, which is August 13th, nor does it commemorate the date of his death. That would be April 29th of 1980. Still, it's as good a time as any to regale your movie-loving friends and family members with your encyclopedic knowledge of Hitchcock trivia. So we have to celebrate National Alfred Hitchcock Day. That's tomorrow. The 13th, March 13th, is National Open an Umbrella Indoors Day.
Tempt fate.
Uh-huh. This day is for facing down that age-old superstition. Open an umbrella indoors and shield yourself from the bad luck that may or may not follow. So, who comes up with these things, man? National Open an Umbrella Indoors Day. We got a break here, and then we'll come back, and I got more offbeat holidays that you can celebrate here in March. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with more right here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning. And it's a jokey time. We'll get to that in a little bit. Now we're talking about some offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March, like National Open an Umbrella Indoors Day. March 14th is Pi Day. Don't let the sound of the name fool you. 314 does not commemorate the sweet baked treat. It's the official day of the Greek letter symbolizing the ratio of the circumference of a circle and its diameter, also known as 3.14, blah, 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 blah. I know people who know all of the numbers in pi.
It's like a point of pride.
Yeah. You know who knows them, who knows all of them? This is, I always remember this, is and is very proud of it and would do it anytime, was Chris Hardwick.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a nerd. He's the nerdist.
I mean, if anybody's going to know, it's going to be Chris.
Right. So he used to do that all the time when he was he used to show off all the time on At Midnight. He would do the old Pi Day, and they made a big deal out of it too. March 15th is True Confessions Day. According to the calendar, March 15th is the perfect day to confess all of your deepest, darkest secrets. Okay. March 16th is Lips Appreciation Day. Pucker up and give your pout some well-deserved love and attention on Lips Appreciation Day. Okay.
A lot of chapstick sold for Lips Appreciation Day.
Exactly. Also on March 16th, Play the Recorder Day. Limber up those fingers and celebrate the ubiquitous childhood instrument with a rousing rendition of Hot Cross Buns. Did you ever play the recorder when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Fourth grade. It was like they called it recorder karate because we would have to learn certain songs, and each one was more difficult than the last. And when you mastered a song, they would tie on a colored ribbon like a karate belt.
Oh, wow.
And then I think the black belt was like something like Ode to Joy.
Oh, boy.
And then you just didn't have to do it anymore, and that was useless skill out the window.
I never played a recorder. I know that a lot of kids go through the recorder phase.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Yeah, I never played it.
You're lucky.
Yeah. March 16th is also Everything You Do Is Right Day. Okay. Yes, that's correct. We couldn't agree more. Everything You Do Is Right Day. That's March 16th.
A little self-affirmation.
Even if you play the recorder, everything that day is. March 20th is Won't You Be My Neighbor Day. Everyone's favorite neighbor, Fred Rogers, was born on March 20th, 1928, and this holiday now serves as an occasion to remember the beloved TV star and honor him by being kind, generous, and downright neighborly. Have you seen Won't You Be My Neighbor? Did you see the documentary?
Yeah, I caught it on HBO. They just added it to HBO, and I'm not going to lie, Waterworks, really.
Oh, no, yeah.
I was weeping.
Yeah. No, it's a great movie.
Grow up with much of Mr. Rogers, but I was struck by it.
You know, one of the things that I love about the story behind Mr. Rogers is that you happen to be wearing a Day of the Dead t-shirt.
Yes, sir.
With my main man, Bub. Probably the best zombie in the history of film. George Romero got his start on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah, because that was Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was out of Pittsburgh. So George Romero, what's really funny is that George Romero was working on Mr. Rogers when he made Night of the Living Dead. And in fact, some of the equipment that they used to work on Night of the Living Dead was also equipment from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So there's a connection between Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Romero's zombie movies. And I just love that. I love that Night of the Living Dead is forever connected to... Yeah. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
How great would it be to have Fred Rogers, they're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yeah. Yeah.
Missed opportunity, but.
I don't know. Man, oh, man. I'm just sad that, but I was devastated when George Romero passed away.
Yeah.
I got to meet him a bunch of times. I had him on the show, and he was an incredible man and one of the greatest talents of all time. I mean,
Incredibly sweet from what I've seen.
Like, unbelievably nice guy.
Super kind.
Unbelievably. And brilliant.
Yeah.
He was a brilliant, brilliant guy. I had him on the show several times, and, he came to Flashback Convention 4 or 5 times, and I got to do his Q&As. And, he was just a massive, massively talented guy. So, all right. So, we've got more unusual offbeat holidays to celebrate in March, and I'll tell you all about them right after we break here. And the news is coming up after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios right here in downtown Chicago, here till 5. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time and much more. We were talking right now about some offbeat holidays that you can celebrate in March. If you want to jump in. At any time, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We were just talking about how March 20th is Won't You Be My Neighbor Day. And also on March 20th, it's Extraterrestrial Abductions Day.
Says now's your chance.
There's no reason to believe that there will be an unusual proliferation of UFOs on this out-of-this-world holiday. At least that's what Big Brother wants you to believe. Extraterrestrial Abductions Day. March 22nd is National Goof Off Day. That's every day in my life. It says relax, take a break, play hooky, or just goof off in your own quiet way at your desk. But if you tell your boss, we're the ones who suggested it, we'll deny it. March 23rd is National Puppy Day. Most of us don't really need an excuse to spend all day watching adorable young pups playing. But on March 23rd, it's your nationally mandated duty. If merely observing puppies is not enough for you, consider donating to your local animal shelter or take the plunge and adopt one already. Oh, National Puppy Day. All right. March 25th is Tolkien Reading Day. This annual holiday was started by the Tolkien Society back in 2003 and gives you a great excuse to reread The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings sagas again or for the very first time.
That's my favorite day.
You know, it's funny because when I was growing up, I read The Hobbit. You know, when I was a kid. but I didn't read any of the Lord of the Rings books, and I was one of those guys who made fun of people who was like Tolkien, because I was like, I still am, you know, I'm a horror fanatic, okay? And so I used to you know, make fun of like the fantasy dorks, when in fact I was a horror dork. So I was just as big a dork as, you know, as these people that I was mocking, simply because, you know, they liked the fantasy stuff and the Tolkiens and the Star Wars and all that stuff. I made fun of that stuff. But, you know, I was just as big a dork. It's just that it was horror movies instead of fantasy movies. But I remember, you know, like making fun of people, you know, for the Lord of the Rings stuff. And I'd be like, oh, God, get out of here. Because I wasn't crazy about The Hobbit. I read it for school and I wasn't crazy about it. So all these years go by, you know. And then the movies come out. So the first Lord of the Rings movie, Fellowship. I'd never read the books or anything, and I used to mock people for reading them. And then I saw the movie. When I saw Fellowship, I lost my mind. And I remember specifically, I had a friend of mine who was a bartender at Simon's up in Andersonville, and he was a full on Tolkien geek. And I remember after the screening, after I saw the movie, I saw the preview screening, I went to the bar right afterwards, and my friend's name is Jim, and I went up to Jim. I'm like, Jim, this movie is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then I was like, you got to lend me the book. You got to lend me the books. And so, all those years of mocking people, you know, for reading those books, I took everything back. I was like, I am so sorry. And then I read all three of the books, like, immediately. And he gave me Jim had the special, like, deluxe edition.
It was, like, all one volume?
All one volume. Well, it's like, it was three separate books, but it was all in one package.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it came with a big map of Middle Earth, so that you can follow the adventures. I was a total geek. I was like reading it. I got the map out and everything. And then when I finished the books, I'm like, I'm really sorry that I ever made fun of anybody for reading these books, because they're awesome.
Yeah.
But it was the movie that got me. Like, I mean, I would have never read it, but that movie, the, you know, Fellowship is just, you know, well, first of all three of them are great.
Yeah.
And it, Return of the King is the best of the three. I mean, it's hard to even, you know, imagine, but when I saw Fellowship, I lost my mind. I was like, this movie is unbelievable. And yeah,
can I key into something? I think one of the reasons you might have enjoyed the movie so much is, you know, directed by Peter Jackson, who's got that horror background.
Oh yeah. Oh no.
And
yeah, I think, yeah, yeah.
And he totally brought that. Well, and he's like, all right,
people if you see the first couple of Peter Jackson movies, be like, what is this? But yeah, and Peter Jackson is just—he's a great filmmaker in general, you know.
Yeah,
all the way around. But I and it was funny because that they came out. Lord of the Rings came out in 2001, and that, if I'm not mistaken, was the same year the first Harry Potter movie came out.
Yep,
they were right around the same time, and it's funny, you know, I'm mocking people for reading, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies, and I'm mocking people, and I was a Harry Potter fan. Like, I read all the Harry Potter books. I made fun of people for reading Lord of the Rings, and yet I was reading all the Harry Potter books.
Well, Lord of the Rings can be like a new level of geek. Like, I've read The Silmarillion, which is basically like just heavy text, and like, it's not really a story so much as it is just 300 to 400 pages of world building, so you can go deep on that. You can go real deep.
Yeah, I don't know, but it is March 25th, Tolkien Reading Day, from started by the Tolkien Society. Also on March 25th, International Waffle Day, a tradition that originated in Sweden. International Waffle Day basically encourages the consumption of all things bready and waffled, and it's hard to disagree with that. International Waffle Day. All right. March 31st is Eiffel Tower Day. One of the world's most famous towers was dedicated to the city of Paris on March 31st in 1889. Named for its designer, Gustave Eiffel, the structure was intended to commemorate the French Revolution. The Parisian landmark isn't the only famous structure with Eiffel's paw prints all over it. He also helped design the framework for New York's Statue of Liberty. So there you go. So those are some offbeat holidays that you can celebrate.
Add them all to your calendar.
Add them
you
all.
Got a full month.
So here's another little thing that we were going to talk about. I want to get to this. Are you a fan of the Shamrock Shake, Tom?
You know what? Not really. I've never understood the hype.
Wow.
I don't get it. People freak out. It's not for me.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I love them. I love the Shamrock Shake. But yeah, we have 10 delicious facts about McDonald's Shamrock Shake because it's back now. For a limited time.
Got to be one of the most beloved McDonald's items of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, this is a big time of year for the Shamrock Shake. And, of course, because it's Lent, the Filet-O-Fish.
Naturally.
And I know they've got a new Filet-O-Fish commercial. I've not heard it. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in this studio right here where I don't have the volume on. But I've seen the commercial. And I don't know if they've brought back the... Because do you remember the... The fantastic Filet-O-Fish commercial.
What years would that have been on?
Mid 2000s.
I bet it's one of those things where if I saw it or if I heard it, it would take me
I'm
back.
I'm trying to. I have the song. It's the Filet-O-Fish theme song, which is one of my. Which I love that commercial. I can't find the. I had it.
Here. Is it the one with the singing bass?
Yeah, here it is.
Give me back that Filet-O-Fish. Give me that fish. Give me back that Filet-O-Fish. Give me that fish. What if it were you hanging up on this wall? If it were you in that sandwich, you wouldn't be laughing at all.
Okay, it's the greatest. It's the greatest commercial theme song of all time, and I know that they had stopped. They had stopped showing it, which makes no sense to me because every year they should just have that commercial.
Oh, for sure.
To promote Filet-O-Fish during Lent. That's it. And I remember the first time I saw that commercial, I laughed my ass off the whole time. I loved everything about it. And they did like two or three different versions of it, but it was always the bass on the wall who was singing it. And when I was looking up in the, and I don't know if anybody's seen, if they brought that song back, let me know. 312-981-7200. Because like I said, I've seen the new commercial, but I have not heard it. So I don't know. But in the new commercial for the Filet-O-Fish, they bring back the bass.
Oh, thank God.
So I don't know if he's singing. I don't know if he sings Bring Me Back That Filet-O-Fish. But I know that the talking bass is actually part of the Filet-O-Fish commercial now, which they got rid of. I actually, when that commercial came out that theme song, the Filet-O-Fish theme song, I actually had the guys on who wrote the song, the guy who created the song for the commercial, and needless to say, it wasn't really surprising that as they were coming up with ideas that there was booze involved. I was not surprised by that at all, and I would imagine there was a little weed involved too. That would be my guess. And these guys were like young. They're like, yeah, we just, you know, came up with the idea and we thought it was, you know, and it was like three guys came up with this, bring me back that Filet-O-Fish thing. And they were boozing it up. And then they turned into this, you know, massively, huge commercial.
I wonder what the payout was on that.
I don't know.
Massive.
I don't know. But, yeah. So that was that we actually had the guys on. We tracked down the guys who composed that stupid Filet-O-Fish song, which is just my favorites. But I don't know if they're using it in the, like I said, I don't know if they're using it in the commercial right now. But I've seen, you know, in the visual, they did bring back the bass, the talking bass. So anyway. All right. Well, that's Filet-O-Fish. But we're talking about Shamrock Shake. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, I've got some delicious facts about McDonald's Shamrock Shake. And if you want to jump in with anything, it's 312-981-7200. And we'll jump into it right after we break here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here till 5 o'clock. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And, yeah, so we're about to talk about some delicious facts about the McDonald's Shamrock Shake. And many people overdo it with the drinking on St. Patrick's Day, but it's not always Guinness or Jameson that gets them into trouble. Sometimes it's the Shamrock Shake. McDonald's uniquely green and often elusive seasonal treat. Here's the skinny on the 660 calorie indulgence. 660 calories.
Yeesh.
Wow.
That's a meal.
It wasn't always known as the Shamrock Shake. The original name of the cult classic milkshake was slightly less alliterative. It was called the St. Patrick's Day Green Milkshake.
That's a mouthful.
The St. Patrick's Day Green Milkshake. That's what it was originally called. Next little fact here is it's a charitable endeavor. What does the Shamrock Shake have to do with the Ronald McDonald House and the Philadelphia Eagles? Everything, according to the fast food giant. When Eagles tight end Fred Hill's daughter was being treated for leukemia in 1974, Fred and his wife spent a lot of time in waiting rooms and noticed many other emotionally depleted families doing the same. He thought it would be healthier for families to if they had a place to call home while their children were being treated. So he used his football connections to get in touch with the local advertising agency who did work for Mickey D's. They agreed to give profits from the Shamrock Shake toward a home near the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, which ended up becoming the very first ever Ronald McDonald House. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
that's
a good
nice
backstory. Makes me want to get one now.
Uncle O'Grimacy used to be its ambassador. Back in the early 80s, a fairly offensive character named Uncle O'Grimacy was used to promote the seasonal shake. I wonder if we have a picture of Uncle O'Grimacy. Is Uncle O'Grimacy available online? Because I know Grimace, so what was it, just like a version of Grimace? Uncle O'Grimacy.
Oh, wow, this is... Yeah, he's Grimace, but completely green. He's got a shamrock kind of vest on, a little green hat, and a shillelagh.
Of course he has a shillelagh.
My God.
He wouldn't be Uncle O'Grimacy without a shillelagh.
That's rough.
No restaurant is required to carry it. In 2012, it was announced that for the first time, the Shamrock Shake would be available in all McDonald's nationwide, but not all restaurants have to carry them. Regional managers decide whether their stores will carry the shakes each year. Well, who would not carry the Shamrock Shake? What manager of a McDonald's would go, no, we choose not to carry the Shamrock Shake?
Someone who wants their franchise to fail.
Come on, man. How about this one? Jimmy Fallon once depleted a New York City's restaurant's entire Shamrock Shake supply. If you're a New Yorker and you didn't get a much-craved Shamrock Shake in 2011, it's probably Jimmy Fallon's fault. When he caught wind that a Union Square Mickey D's had the elusive dessert, he totally cleaned them out, purchasing more than 100 shakes for his audience. New Yorkers were not pleased with Mr. Fallon. For the whole audience. That's a nice treat for the audience, then.
Yeah, for the audience.
It's almost, yeah, it's almost not quite as much as putting up with Jimmy Fallon for an hour. But there was an ice cream offshoot, and it didn't fare as well. Despite the smashing success of the shake, the Shamrock Sundae was a dismal failure. Introduced in 1980, it was discontinued after just a year. Apparently, people prefer their unnaturally green desserts in shake form as opposed to scoop form. I don't remember that. I worked at McDonald's in the early 80s. That would be a year later because I started there in 81. But I don't remember that at all. But it's not scoop form because McDonald's doesn't... They have soft serve.
Yeah.
McDonald's is not a scoop. You don't scoop. It's a soft serve.
Like a spoon form.
We used to have to... that was always a lot of fun, cleaning that soft serve machine.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. That was a lot of fun.
How long would that realistically take to clean that thing out so that it could be used the next day?
Well, I mean, it was at the end of the night when we would have to do this. You had to clean it every night. And you'd have to, like, like stick a hose inside and flush it all out, get everything flushed out. And yeah, it was not. It was one of the least. The manager had to do it, so it was like we never got stuck with doing it because the closing manager had to do it. That was one of the duties of the closing manager.
Yeah.
So we never had to do it, but I was, you know, I would help out every once in a while, and it was just not good. How about this? There have been many supersized versions. Behold the biggest Shamrock Shake ever made. For a few years, a giant shake was poured into the Chicago River to help contribute to the green hue it's dyed every year. A donation was also made to the Ronald McDonald House. I did not know that.
Because it's the plumbers union, right?
I did not know that. That they were dumping some Shamrock Shake into the river out here. All right, there's a website dedicated to helping you track one down. Are you one of those unfortunate souls who has to hunt the shake down every year? There are others like you, and they can help at shamrockshake.com. Other fans will tell you the exact location and time where they located it. They got that for the McRib, too.
Yeah,
we can find out where the McRib is. When I worked at McDonald's, the McRib was a regular item on the menu. It wasn't seasonal.
Why change it?
I don't know. It's the best sandwich ever. I love the McRib. Here's what I love about the McRib. There's no lying in that sandwich.
No?
No, because it's it just you look at it and you go, oh, boy, this is completely processed because they're, it looks like bones and it's not. So the McRib is telling you, yes, I am processed. There's no lying.
You can have a healthy relationship with
That's
it.
Exactly right. How about this? You can make your own at home. If you still can't find the shake, you have another option. Just make your own. Is there like a recipe? Because it's like, it's green, but it's vanilla and it's minty. Yeah. That's all it is. It's like a little touch of mint with vanilla.
It's kind of like you can make Baja Blast at home with Mountain Dew and Blue Powerade.
Is that right?
That's all it is.
And now they come with a special straw. Last month, McDonald's unveiled an amazing innovation for Shamrock Shake lovers, the straw. Short for suction tube for reverse axial withdrawal. Well, I didn't know that that's what that stood for. The straw was designed by real engineers at the aerospace and robotics engineering firms Jace and NK Labs, specifically with the Shamrock Shake in mind. What sets the device apart from conventional straws is the sharp bend in its shape, with the three eye-shaped holes in addition to the opening at the bottom. The extra holes are positioned in a way that allows drinkers to take a sip of a new layered version of the frosty treat that is equal parts top the mint layer from the bottom chocolate layer. What? There's chocolate in a Shamrock Shake? I've never had chocolate in a Shamrock Shake.
I don't remember that.
So,
but you've got some of the greatest minds in America figuring out how to make a
Shamrock Shake. This is a very weird looking straw, though, and it comes in its own box. It comes in its own box. So I don't know. It doesn't say what they charge for it, but it's a very strange-looking device.
Perfect for birthdays, Christmas, Easter.
Sure. Well, there you go. That's all you need to know about the Shamrock Shake.
Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Delicious facts about the McDonald's Shamrock Shake. How long do they? This goes through Easter, right?
I want to say, yeah. Shake? Goes for a minute.
It's for St. Patrick's Day, right? Obviously.
Yeah. So I know they keep it around for
a little bit more.
While. Yeah.
What are we, about 6 days away from St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, it's this Sunday.
Sunday.
Yep.
All right. There you go. So, just in time for St. Patrick's Day. Everything you need to know about the Shamrock Shake. All right. We're going to break here. By the way, we have some clever products that will protect your lunch from food thieves. You know how we all share refrigerators here at the station?
I've seen some tactics.
And, No. It's a thing. It's a thing at most workplaces. But we're going to give you some advice on how to make sure nobody steals your food from the fridge, from the communal fridge here at work. But first, let's break for the news. Nobody else can do it like you do. Yeah. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're also going to talk about, a little bit later on, we're also going to talk about best animal performances in film history. Because of this damn cat in Captain Marvel, Goose is the cat's name, and all but steals the movie. It's a fantastic animal performance. So we're going to go back and look at some of our favorite animal performances in movies. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200 for your favorite animal performances. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Right now, though, we have some products that will protect your lunch from food thieves. It's happened to all of us. You've been thinking about lunch all morning. When it's finally time to eat, you realize that your meal has been stolen by one of your coworkers. Food theft is no joke and should not be taken lightly. Keep your edibles safe from your thieving colleagues with these protective products. Fred EMT Emergency Meal Transport Insulated Lunch Tote. So here's the deal. I'm looking at this thing right now. No one is going to want to steal an organ. After all, those can't be properly cooked in the break room microwave. The bag is foam insulated to keep your kidney or sandwich cold. It's great for anyone who doesn't work at a hospital. And it's $20. You can get it on Amazon. It's $20. And it just says EMT. It's got an EMT logo on it that's attached to the handle. And it says human organ for transplant on the outside so that it will discourage anybody from trying to steal it. It's because that's something you don't want to eat.
I'm going to say yes, Esmeralda would buy that. Oh, I thought.
that's a good one. We totally, yeah. Human organ for transplant. You should see this thing. It would discourage. I think it would.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, how about this? Accoutrements crime scene sandwich bags. This is a set of 10 plastic baggies that comes with either police tape or quarantine banners. If they don't succeed at thwarting thieves, you have to close off the kitchenette with a real crime scene tape and dust for prints. So it comes in crime scene and quarantine. And, yeah, those are available at Amazon for $5 for the bags.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad.
And two-day shipping?
There's two different kinds. You got your quarantine and you have your crime scene. So whichever you want to go for to keep people discouraged from stealing your food. How about roach bag clips?
Yeesh. Just like
if making your lunch look like a crime scene doesn't work, try making it look infested. These bag clips are designed to look like everyone's least favorite mealtime companion, the cockroach. Stick them on your snack bags to deter even the most strong stomach lunch thieves. This is really, I'm looking at a picture of it right now, and so basically you've got this clip to clip onto the bag, and it looks like a big roach. Looks like a big cockroach.
Pretty realistic.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Not pleasant. Could you imagine somebody opening up the fridge here and seeing that?
Just big old roach.
You know who would go nuts with that if that was Mary? Mary Vandeville.
Oh, she afraid of insects?
No. She cleans the fridges here.
Okay.
When we were across the river in the Tribune building, we had a refrigerator. Vic, you remember this, right outside the newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary would come in every morning and look and see, you know, if people left food there for like 3 or 4 days, and she cleaned it all the time. Like, she put notes on the refrigerator, take your food out of here, it's going to be pits, it's going to be pitched. And she was just like, so if she opened up a fridge here and there was a big roach on a piece of plastic, she'd go nuts.
It'd be gone. And that's the thing, really, with these, I would fear that, I love the ideas, but I would fear that, you know, your purpose is to keep from losing your lunch to theft. I think you would lose it to just sanitation. Well, somebody would see it, just
trash.
Toss it.
Yeah, going to toss you know, to throw
like
the,
Mary.
Throw the, yeah, like Mary would
right.
throw that out. If there was, if she opened up the fridge and there was a cockroach on top of a piece of, you know, on a. And by the way, this cockroach is pretty big too, like this clip. And there, by the way, you can get this at Amazon, $8 for a pack of four.
What?
$8 for a pack of four roaches.
Excuse me, I got to go order these.
To clip onto your food to deter people from stealing. How about this one? Forum Novelties Moldy Sandwich Bags. Oh, I've seen these before. It's printed to look gross. So these bags will take it a step further with fake mold and a cockroach. Even if that doesn't trick anyone, it's certain to ruin their appetite. There are only four bags per pack, so use them wisely and be sure to check your food for real mold before use. They're available at $5 for $5 at Amazon. But yeah, so basically you look at the sandwich bag and it's the sandwich looks disgusting. It's all moldy. And there's a roach in there. And they're called Forums Fun Stuff Gross Sandwich Bags. Printed to look gross. That's what they say. Wow. All right. How about this? Fred Already Been Chewed Cookie Cutters. All right. Make your sneaky coworker believe that someone beat them to the punch by using these cookie cutters, which make it look like these tasty treats have already been snacked on. The three gingerbread men molds have been made for a bite mark shape aimed at different parts of their bodies. The package even comes with a gingerbread recipe. So it's like it looks like somebody's already eaten it. There's one gingerbread man with no head. There's one with no arm. There's one with no leg. And they come in three different shapes.
My big fear is that that wouldn't deter some people. They'd be like, okay, so it's a feeding frenzy. And they'd just take the rest of it.
And they would just take the rest of it. $10 on eBay for your cookie cutters. It's Not Your Lunch Locking Lunch Bag. This black bag gets straight to the point. It says, it's not your lunch. If the harsh but valid statement isn't enough to rattle your coworkers, the lock will do the trick. The 8-inch tall bag is insulated to keep your meals at the right temperature, but the main attraction is the hunk of metal standing between the food thieves and your delicious pre-bitten cookies. So there's a big lock on it. And it just simply says, I love this, it just says, it's not your lunch. It's right on the black. It's a black bag. It says it's not your lunch, and then there's a big padlock on it.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. Buy it on It's Not Your Store from $20 up. $20 and up? All right.
I'll go with the roaches.
Yeah.
Or whoever put a piece of tape on some cream in the fridge that just said, like, breast milk.
Yeah. Oh, that's another one. Yeah, I've heard that.
Classic.
The Quesorama stained mug. No one wants to wash other people's dishes, so this dirty mug will be strictly off limits to everyone but you. The design features what looks like spilled coffee and lipstick on the rim, so it appears to have been heavily used. Only you know better. It's dishwasher safe, so you can really get it clean despite its appearance. Yeah, that really does look not good. $19 on Amazon. That's another thing that Mary would pitch. Gone.
Not a chance.
Nope. How about the Kululi portable mini fridge? People won't stop taking your stuff out of the fridge. It's time to get your own. This portable mini fridge, complete with removable shelves, is big enough to hold up to 12 cans of soda. It can be plugged into a regular outlet or even a car cigarette lighter. And it runs more quietly than most computer fans, according to Amazon reviewers. Amazon says that they're $90 a piece, and they have potentially different colors. Now, I'm looking at it, and it's, that seems like a bit much, though, right?
To have your own fridge? Yeah.
That seems like there's a major problem with security if you need to get your own fridge.
Take it up with HR.
Man.
Carolyn Accounting keeps eating my sandwiches.
Fridge safe box locker. If none of these tricks work, you can get more aggressive. Nothing says stay away from my lunch like a plastic food cage with a combination lock. The 12-inch long locker comes with a handle so you can take it to and from work, and in worst-case scenario, your coworker cracks the code and steals your yogurt. At least you'll know they've earned it. $16 from Walmart. It's just a big steel box with a lock on it. So there you go. So those are your products that will deter people from stealing your food. I didn't realize it was that big of an issue. Mm-hmm. Does that ever happen to you here?
Me? No, I rarely ever bring food here. But yeah. I guess if I did, I'd kind of want it protected. But I feel like everybody's pretty respectful, generally. I think the creamer is the big thing, is that we got the coffee machine out there.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to, I'll just take a little splash of milk. A little splash of creamer. And then when everybody does it, all of a sudden, it's gone.
It's gone. Well, I didn't. I've never had an issue. I don't bring food. I generally don't bring food to work. So, it's a different situation for me working this shift. Because if somebody takes something, I can go, oh, that was Vic.
Yeah.
I
see him in that newsroom.
clearly, it was either Dan or Vic. I don't know. Somebody. The suspects are narrowed down pretty quickly too, because there's basically kind of like nobody here in the middle of the night. But during the day, when everybody's here, full sales crew, everybody, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong. I don't know. Has anybody ever had their food stolen? 312-981-7200. Is this a regular occurrence in your office? Tell me about that. 312-981-7200. If you wanted to jump in here, we'd love to hear from you. If that's an issue in your office, maybe you need to get a little maybe you need to get some plastic cockroaches clips. So if that seems to be a problem, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, let's take a break here for some weather, and then we can jump back into this conversation. If this turns out to be a problem in your office, people stealing your food, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right, today, patchy mid-level clouds drift across the area in the morning. The temperatures will climb between 40 and 45 degrees in the afternoon. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Temperatures peak in the mid-40s. For Wednesday, windy and mild with periodic showers. Temperatures will climb to the low 50s. Evening showers and thunderstorms, and then partly cloudy. Thursday, partly sunny and mild in the early afternoon. Sporadic showers. Temperatures will reach the low to mid-60s in midday and drop to the 40s by the evening. And then for Friday, blustery and colder conditions, including passing flurries. Temperatures hold near 40 degrees for most of the day. It's currently 28 degrees at O'Hare, it's 29 at Midway, and it's 30 degrees at the lakefront. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Is it a problem at work? People taking your food? Give us your stories at 312-981-7200. We'll talk about that right after we break here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18th floor here on Wacker. Here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you would like to join us. I was just telling you about these clever little products that you can purchase in order to deter people from stealing your lunch at work when you have the shared refrigerator. I'm wondering if this seems to be an issue in people's offices. So we've got a whole bunch of people who are on the line. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to join in, maybe pick up some of those products that we were talking about. So, all right, let's see. Here is Mr. X. Mr. X, go ahead. Hi.
Yeah, I had to go under cover here for this one. I had a guy that when I would get off of work, I put like a 1.25 liter of Coke in the fridge, so that way the next day I'd have it. And he would come in the morning, and first thing he would go up there and he would drink like half the bottle. And I kept telling everybody. And then one day some guy told me who worked on a night shift who got off in the morning says he'd go up and go change to go home. And he says there's this guy drinking my pop. And other people told me the same thing. They said it was always the same guy. So kept doing it for months, many months. And finally I told everybody there. It was probably about seven of us, and including him. I said, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to drink the pop out of there, half of it, and I'm going to pee in there, and that's it. So if you want to drink it, go ahead. So it kept going on. So I finally did it. Came in the next day with a brand new bottle, drank it half or about a third of it, did it, and then put it in the fridge. And sure enough, come back and half the bottle's gone.
Oh, wow.
So, that, but he, and he deserved it too because, well, he asked me to co-sign for a car for him one time. I said, I'm not going to co-sign for you. He wants you to get your family. He says, they won't co-sign for me. I says, no, no. If I co-sign it, then I'm responsible. He goes, no, no. If I, he thought I was dumb. He's like, if you co-sign it, and he says, I just pay it. That's all there is. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, I found out after he left, somebody told me how he had the car. He had a Mazda, kind of a nice little sporty Mazda. And they were asking, how does like a 19-year-old kid get a Mazda? And he said, the guy that I worked with told me, he says, he used to work over at Navy Pier at the movie theater there. And actually, I think he worked cleaning and stuff like that in the lobbies, but he, you know, worked over by the movie theater. And him and a friend, his friend convinced him to talk to this girl that worked there who kind of had a crush on him. So she was talking to him. And his friend went in the drawer and stole like $3,000. And then they split it. That's where he got the down payment for the car.
Wow. All right. Sounds like a great guy. All right, Mr. X, thanks for the call. Here's Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. At work, College DuPage custodians use red biohazard bags for blood and vomit.
Yeah.
And I put my lunch in one of them and put it in the fridge. Everybody knew it was a joke, but it looked pretty cool. You open up the fridge and it says biohazard.
Right. That's one of the products that we were just talking about.
Yeah, custodians use them all the time.
To keep people
okay,
away.
Bye-bye.
Okay, take care. I didn't realize that this was such a thing. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's weird because, like I said, it's hard for me to, you know, kind of comment on this because of the hours that we work, you know. But if you're hearing it, I mean, I remember when I was working at... I was an editor at a magazine years ago, and we had a shared refrigerator, and it was a small office, so it wasn't like, you know, there was a ton of people there. But I remember one time my food went missing, and nobody admitted to it. There were only like 12 people in the office. It was a small office, but somebody did take my food, but I never found out who it was. So. You know,
that's a pretty low thing to do, really.
Well,
like,
yeah,
to take someone's food straight up, not to mention one of your coworkers.
No, I know it's really. I mean, you just don't expect that. You know what I mean?
Huh.
You know, I would feel. You know, I would never do that. You know what I mean? You just feel terrible trying to do that. It's like a violation too.
Yeah, and I just don't want to eat someone else's food.
Yeah,
like all that stuff aside, where it's like, yeah, it's mean. You know, it's not very nice. All that. I just don't want to eat someone else's food. I'll get my own food.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's an issue here.
No,
but I know that we don't have an issue with a dirty refrigerator with Mary Vandeveld here in the building. Yeah. I don't know if she keeps up like she used to when we were across the street and we were across the river and the Trib building. She, you know, that refrigerator was like, that was her thing, you know, and I don't know. We have two here now.
Oh, she can't keep up.
Can't
she?
There's one in the break room down there and then one by the kitchen. So there's two, and these are big fridges too. Now the one that we had on the seventh floor in the Trib building was a real small one. It was a pretty small fridge. And so I don't know, but I didn't think it was that big of an issue. Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, so look, in honor of Captain Marvel, there is a cat, an orange cat in Captain Marvel. The cat's name is Goose, and it's a wonderful cat. He basically kind of steals the movie, and they handle this cat beautifully. In the film, and he kind of steals the movie. So that's Goose the cat, and that got me to thinking: what are your favorite animal performances in film history? And I got a list here of some of the best animal performances in film history because this cat in Captain Marvel was just fantastic. one of the true highlights of the movie is this. Have you seen Captain? Did you go this weekend to see Captain?
I did. Yeah.
What did you think?
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of a little bit past the Marvel thing because the Iron Man came out when I was going into high school, so I was like, oh wow, this is new, this is cool, this is
2008. That was a big year.
Yeah, big year. And then I just kind of realized with the last Avengers movie, I'm like, oh wow, I have been watching these movies for 10 years.
Yeah. It's the 10th anniversary. If you now, you know, if you see the Marvel Studios logo,
yeah.
The I and the O are a one and a zero because it's the 10 year. I can't believe it's been 10 years.
Yeah, and it kind of just made me realize that I've watched a lot of movies that I felt obligated to.
Yeah,
and I don't know if I enjoyed even half of them.
Yeah, I run hot and cold on these things.
Yeah,
one of the reasons why I like this one is I just happen to really, really love Brie Larson.
Oh, I mean, you're not wrong. She's amazing. She's incredible. So, yeah. I mean, she's probably the best part of it for me. Yeah. I like a little bit of that. But overall, I was like, I could probably just never watch this again, and I wouldn't feel like I missed
it. And it was a big setup for the next Avengers movie,
right?
Like that final scene in the in
absolutely.
The film. So, all right, we'll take a break, but the cat's great. I can tell you that much. Goose the Cat is fantastic, and we're going to talk about the best animal performances in film history, and we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200, and we'll do that right after the break. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. We have my dad call in and tell a joke every Monday to kick off your week. And we're here. It's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're going to talk about the best animal performances in film history. What are some of your favorites? Some great animal performances. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because there's this fantastic cat in Captain Marvel named Goose. And it's a... it's a pretty great looking cat and pretty cool performance. And there's a lot of surprises too with this character, with this cat character that pop up in the movie. But yeah, so I thought we could talk about animal performances. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some texts that already came in. So with people talking about their favorite animal performances in film history, 312-981-7200. 630 area code says, for animal performances, and speaking of roaches, the kitten from Netflix Haunting of Hill House, or the goat Black Phillip from The Witch. Oh, I'm all about Black Phillip.
He gored one of the actors, I'm pretty sure, at least.
Did he?
Yeah, whoever played the dad in that, the patriarch, he got whacked with that goat.
That's funny. I have a t-shirt that just says that it's a drawing of a goat. Okay, and it just says live deliciously.
Oh, that's rad.
And I wear it and people have no idea what it is, except, you know, like when I'm like at Flashback Horror Convention, then it's like, oh, that shirt's awesome. But anybody else would be like, I have no idea what that means. I love that movie. I thought that movie was great.
It's free. It gave me some nightmares. Oh, man, I haven't had nightmares since I was a kid.
No, that's a. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, that's a really scary movie. But I still say, Hereditary is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. That movie is terrifying.
I watched that with one other person in the theater I work at 1 o'clock in the morning, just the two of us, and that theater is haunted as hell. I am not superstitious, but. It was very much an unsettling experience, and we had to shut off the projector and everything. We turned every single light on in the theater
it. It's that kind of movie, man. And Toni Collette, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What a star.
301 area code says, good morning, guys. Great animal performance. Tiger, who was the dog on Brady Bunch and has blood in the 1975 dog Boy and His Dog. Featuring Don Johnson. A Boy and His Dog. That's a classic cult movie. So, animal performances, 312-981-7200. Here's what this article says. The best animal performances in film history includes some of the greatest cinematic achievements by dogs, cats, monkeys, dolphins, and even bears. These animals provide great supporting roles in major motion pictures. Whether they're acting heroically or just providing some much-needed comic relief, animals in movies always add an extra something to the big screen. Be sure to vote for your favorite animal performances in film history. And vote down to those animals who performances that you lacked a certain humanity. From Einstein in Back to the Future to Uggie from The Artist, dogs have definitely led the pack, so to speak. when it comes to great animal performances. These four-legged thespians are highly trained professionals who can steal entire films from humans. They can make us laugh like Crystal the Monkey in Hangover 2 or cry like Old Yeller. Hats off to the dogs of cinema and their great trainers. It's not fair to... it's not fair or right to exclude other brilliant animal movie performances either. Monkeys and orangutans are also on the list. Who can forget Clyde from Every Which Way But Loose or Crystal from The Hangover Part 2? In case you're wondering, we've included movies that feature actual live animals. This unfortunately disqualifies the gopher from Caddyshack because it's a puppet. And also animated movies like 101 Dalmatians or Lady and the Tramp. So we're looking at some of the best animal performances. And what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, I got one for you. Canine with Bill Murray.
Ah, yes.
And that dog's name was Jerry Lee. And I actually had a German Shepherd named Jerry Lee, which he had a wire to lose. He didn't quite make out very well.
Well, the Jerry Lee from K9 did make this list as one of the best performances.
Yes. Well, I thank you, and you guys have a good evening.
All right, take care, Jeff. Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Jerry Lee from K9 now it says here that that particular dog Jerry Lee from K9 was played by multiple dogs. So it wasn't just one dog, and that's the case for a lot of animals where they need, because certain dogs, you know, like certain dogs are good at one thing, and certain dogs are different, their strengths are different. So if you got a couple of dogs that look exactly alike, but one of them can walk on cue really easily, or one of them can bark when you need them to bark. That's why you have multiple animals, because some of them are good at other things and other things. Yeah. So
gotta have a whole team.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Here on the list here, and I believe this person has put him in order. He says number one is Toto.
Yeah.
From The Wizard of Oz, played by Toto. A great dog performance right there. Number two on the list is Lassie, which is not a surprise. That was a beautiful dog, too.
And in terms of iconic animals on screen, like you say Lassie... Most young people nowadays, but like, I never watched Lassie, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Got to go save Timmy from the well.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have Shadow from Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
Is that the Golden Retriever? I did grow up watching those.
Let's see. It's the, I don't know which one is which. Because then the next one here is Chance.
Okay.
Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey, and Homeward Bound 2. And that's played by Rattler the dog. And Shadow was played by Ben. And they're both from the Homeward Bound movies.
I do like it when animals have, like, people names. I think that's always the preferred method.
And then, of course, Benji. From Benji, the movies, and Benji Off the Leash, and For the Love of Benji, and all that stuff. Benji was one of the great movie dogs of all time. It's really funny. A friend of mine is named Benji, and it's spelled just like that. It's B-E-N-J-I, and his full name's not Benjamin. It's just his mother named him after the dog. I'm not kidding. His mother loves Benji.
You're named after the dog?
And named after... I was like... Because I didn't know this. You know, I knew the guy for several years.
Yeah, sure.
And I just assumed his name was Benjamin. You know? I just assumed. And I'm like, I go, how long have you been going by Benji? He's like, what do you mean, how long have I been going by Benji? I go, doesn't anybody ever call you Ben or Benjamin? And he's like, my name's not Benjamin. I'm like, what? And then he told me the story.
Oh, jeez.
His name is Benji, and he was indeed named after the dog.
does he like feel sore about it, or is he just, yeah, it's all
right? He's used to it now. I mean, but I just assumed his full name was Benjamin. I had no idea. Who would have thought that he's named after the dog? But that's what happened. His mom.
Never in a million years.
His mom. His mom named him after the dog, Benji. Which I mean, you know, I think he's it's amusing to him now.
Sure.
You know, maybe when he was a kid, he wasn't so happy about it, you know. But it's, I mean, you know, he's an adult now, so it's like, you know. But, yeah, when I first heard that, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Benji after the dog. So.
I'm guessing Beethoven's on that list.
Beethoven is, yes, Beethoven I'm looking at right now.
Big old St. Bernard.
Yep. And that's played by Beethoven. That's the actual dog. And then, of course, we have Old Yeller, which is like Benji, then Old Yeller, then Beethoven. That's how it goes. Old Yeller, played by Spike, the dog.
Mm.
That was the name of Old Yeller, Spike. So, all right, we got to take a break here. We want to hear from you guys. Animal performances, the best animal performances in film history because of this great cat, Goose, from the Captain Marvel movie. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's your weather. Patchy, mid-level clouds drift across the area this morning. Temperatures will climb between 40 and 45-degree range this afternoon. Mostly sunny tonight, or tomorrow, sorry. Mostly sunny. Temperatures will peak in the mid-40s for Wednesday. Windy, mild with periodic showers. Temperatures will climb to the low 50s with evening showers or thunderstorms, then partly cloudy. Thursday, partly sunny and mild into the early afternoon. Sporadic showers. Temperatures will reach the low to mid-60s midday, the drop to the 40s by the evening. And then for Friday, blustery and colder conditions, including passing flurries. Temperatures will hold near 40 degrees for most of the day. It's currently 28 degrees at O'Hare. It's 29 at Midway and 30 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a little break here. And when we come back, we want to hear from you guys. Talk or text at 312-981-7200 with your favorite animal performances of all time. 312-981-7200. Attending a Chicago university and homeless, ashamed, struggling to survive, how a group of college students finally found refuge. Tuesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. If you want to jump in here, we're talking about the best animal performances in film history in honor of this great cat performance in the new Captain Marvel movie, Goose the Cat, if you want to... jump in here with your thoughts, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let's see, got some texts coming in. 630 area code says, in a crossover from TV to movie, I recall that Yo Quiero Taco Bell Chihuahua was the same dog in Legally Blonde. Is that true?
I'm going to fact check it, but I would not be shocked.
I love the Taco Bell dog. I love that that ad campaign.
When did they start getting rid of that?
Oh, it's been gone for a while.
Yeah, it's big in the 90s.
Yeah, no, that was, I remember when that terrible Matthew Broderick Godzilla movie came out, there was a tie-in. Taco Bell hit, you know, had the merchandise and stuff in the tie-in with Godzilla, and the commercial was the Taco Bell dog walking around in New York going, here, lizard, lizard, lizard. He was trying to call out the Godzilla. Here, lizard, lizard, lizard. But yeah, No Quiero Taco Bell, man. That was that. I love that dog. I loved that dog. There's a quick, funny story. I actually got to meet Robert Duvall at the Chicago Film Critic Association Awards. And he came to town to win, he won Best Actor for his movie The Apostle. He won Best Actor at the Chicago Film Critics Awards, and he came to town. And he was in the, the reception was at this restaurant, and he was sitting down with his beautiful wife, and they're at the table. And I just wanted to go over and just to say hi and just say, hey, you know, obviously you're Robert Duvall, and I'm a big fan. And I went over and I walked up to his table, and he was sitting at the table, like kind of holding court. There were a few other people at the table there, and he had like a 2-3 bottles of Patron on the table. And so he's like, come on, sit down. And so I sat down. And I was like, I don't want to bother you. I just, you know, obviously I'm a huge fan, and I think you're great, and, you know, all of that stuff. And he's like, all right, you know. And I was like, he goes, I go, thank you, Mr. Duvall. And he's like, no, 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 no. You can call me Bobby D. So I got to call Robert Duvall Bobby D. So I was calling him Bobby D, and then he goes, you want to do a shot of tequila? Now, when I was a drinking man, tequila was not my drink. I didn't do well with tequila when I was a drinking man. But when Bobby D says that we're going to do a shot of tequila, you do a shot of tequila.
Yeah.
You don't deny a shot of tequila with Robert Duvall. That's just something you know.
Tom Hagen tells you to do a shot.
Exactly right.
You do the shot.
Exactly right. Great Santini telling me to do, you know. So we're like, okay, so we, you know, and it was, I mean, it was Patron. It was like top quality. You know, it wasn't like Rotgut tequila. So we go, you know, and there's like five of us at the table, and he's like, all right. And then we hold up the thing. We're going to do a toast. And this was the toast that Robert Duvall said, and I'm not making this up. This is what he said. He goes, yo quiero Taco Bell. And then we did the shot. He loved the dog. Robert Duvall loved the Taco Bell dog.
Well, we do have the name of the dog. It's the dog's name was Gidget.
Okay.
And it was a she, and she appeared as Bruiser's mom in the 2003 sequel to Legally Blonde, Red, White, and Blonde.
Okay. So
she made the crossover, but she passed.
Not in the original.
No. Okay. She passed away at age 15 in 2009.
Aww.
And she's adorable.
Aw. Gidget.
Good old Gidget.
Yeah. Here, lizard. let's see. Here is Sherry on WGN. Hi, Sherry.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you? How about Bart the Bear? To be able to train a grizzly bear and give the people that worked with it credit for even being brave enough. Those stars had really to be brave because you just don't know when he might have an ugly day.
Yeah. Well, Bart the Bear is in a ton of movies and TV like that. Probably the most talented of all the bear actors, because they use Bart like it. And his credits are ridiculous. Like he's got a really long string of credits. He's like, if you want a bear, you got to get Bart. And I think there's like a Bart Jr. Now,
yes.
There's like the son of Bart is also named Bart, and also is incredibly talented and does a lot of movies and TV.
Well, hasn't Bart died?
I think Bart did pass away, and that's why you've got little.
That's why they have the Junior.
Yeah, exactly. But that's one of the most popular of all animal performers is Bart. That's what it went to. If you were going to put a bear in a movie, your go to was Bart. So.
Well, and think about the people that starred with him. How they had to hesitate.
Yeah, sure. It's a big bear. All right, Sherry. Thanks.
All right. Bye now.
Take care. Yeah, he was, you know, Bart the Bear, if you needed a bear, there was a movie called The Edge with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, written by David Mamet, which is a tremendous movie, and Bart the Bear is in that movie, because it's basically about them in the middle of the wilderness, like sort of trapped and they're being attacked by a bear. But he was also the bear in the movie The Bear, which had some of the most complicated stuff that any animal actor had ever done.
Really?
Yeah. 708 area code says, don't forget Mr. Ed. Good old Mr. Ed. 715 area code says, in Breakfast at Tiffany's, the orange tabby, whose character name is Cat. Near the end of the movie, Holly Golightly kicks Cat out of the taxi in the rain, only later to find him shivering in the rain and took him back. Yes. 708 area code, Cujo. Yeah, please. I wonder if they must have had a few St. Bernards for that. I mean, all the crap that they had to put all over that dog.
Yeah. It's probably like you were saying earlier where Cujo had to do a lot.
Yeah.
Probably had multiple dogs. I don't think I've ever gotten over my fear of dogs because of that movie.
That's a scary movie, man.
It's terrifying.
It is. It really is. And it's really, I will say this about that movie. Dee Wallace is unbelievable in that movie. Like, her performance is unbelievable. It's exhausting just to watch her, and the kid, too. You know, basically stuck in this car. It's 100 degrees outside. The kid's got asthma. She's amazing in that movie. I mean, that's a really, really great, great, great performance. Like, a truly great performance.
And if we're doing a new Pet Sematary, I think it's time for a new Cujo.
Well, yeah.
I wouldn't mind it. Not that I don't love, you know.
I don't like the. I can't stand Pet Sematary. I mean, I don't like the movie at all. I like Fred Gwynn.
Sure.
Because he's Fred Gwynn. But that's my favorite Stephen King book.
but the movie has yet to satisfy.
No. I'm looking forward to the remake.
Yeah.
I hope it's better.
Yeah, sure.
But that book, that's a terrifying book. And you just ask Vic about that book. Vic is terrified of that book. We've talked about this before. When he was reading it, this is what Vic says, that when he was reading Pet Sematary, it freaked him out so much that he couldn't have the book in the same room with him when he wasn't reading it.
Oh, boy.
He had to put it in a different room when he wasn't reading the book because it freaked him out so much. It's a scary book. It's a really, really twisted, scary book.
Do they have the pencil thing in the book? Like, is it Pet Sematary or is that Salem's Lot?
Pet Sematary is the pencil into the foot.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's Pet Sematary.
Ugh.
No, but it's a really, really, really scary book. And if they do it justice, if, like, you know, this new remake mm-hmm. does it justice, it's going to be a terrifying movie.
Let's hope so.
And I like the casting of John Lithgow in the Fred Gwynne role, because you can't really replace Fred Gwynne because he's Fred Gwynne. He's the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks a little bit more, you know, like just judging by the tone and the content of the trailer, it feels more like the book than the original movie did. So, let's see. 773 area code says, hey, Nick, Toto, the terrier from Wizard of Oz. Pie Wacket, the black cat from Bell Book and Candle. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Pie Wacket from the Bell Book and Candle. And 815 area code says, best movie animal is Clyde in Any Which Way But Loose, Every Which Way But Loose, and Any Which Way You Can. Clyde.
Interesting moment for Clint Eastwood's career.
Well, you know, those movies were goofy as hell. But I like them.
They're fun.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Yeah. We've got Flipper, played by Mitzi the Dolphin. Willie from Free Willy and Free Willy 2. That's played by Keiko the Orca. One of my favorite, we've mentioned before, one of my favorite dogs of all time, Einstein from Back to the Future. It's one of my favorite, and it's played by Tiger. The dog's name is Tiger, but Einstein. Einie! I love that dog. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, which goes without saying, obviously. How about this one? This is a great one. Baxter from Anchorman.
Oh,
come on, man.
Bark twice if you're in Milwaukee.
And it's played by Peanut.
It's an adorable little dog, too.
Yeah, until Jack Black kicks it
off. Oh, yeah.
That's how I roll. I'm in a glass cage of emotion.
Trash my bike, bro.
Oh, man. This burrito is good, but it is filling. All right, we have to break here. We got the news coming up, and then afterwards we'll jump back in here and talk about your favorite animal performances of all time. 312-981-7200. In honor of the great cat performance in Captain Marvel. All right, we'll break here, and the news is coming up after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in just a few minutes to tell a joke, because we always like to start off the work week with a laugh, and my dad will tell a joke, which we do every week. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, we are talking about great animal performances. Captain Marvel is out, made tons of money over the weekend, and there's a really, really great cat performance in it, played by the cat's name is Goose, and it's a pretty great performance. So we were talking about other great animal performances, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And here is John on WGN. Hi, John.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Not a great one was a movie with Pooch. Tom Hanks played it. He was a detective.
It's Hooch, not Pooch.
Oh, Hooch. Yeah, Hooch. I'm sorry.
Turner and Hooch. Yeah, Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah, that was played by Beasley. That was the name of the dog. Beasley was the name of the dog in Turner and Hooch. I always tell this story when we talk about Turner and Hooch. Kathy O'Malley, who used to be on this radio station, when that movie came out, I was reviewing movies. I used to review movies on Roy Leonard's Saturday morning show, and we would review the movies every Saturday morning at 9:30. Roy was off on vacation, So Kathy O'Malley was filling in, and this was the weekend that Turner and Hooch opened. So we reviewed it, and so I'm in the studio with Kathy, and we're reviewing the movie, and then she goes, you know, this was the weekend it opened, so it had just been open on Friday, and this was a Saturday morning. So it had barely been out for 24 hours. And she says, it's a real shame that I was really surprised when they killed off the dog. She said that on the air, and I went, no, you can't. So she basically announced to everybody listening that the dog does get killed in Turner and Hooch. They kill off the dog in Turner and Hooch. And so, immediately after she said it, the phone lines just lit up, and people were furious. And I was like, Kathy, you can't tell everybody that the dog dies in Turner and Hooch. The movie's not even been out for 12 hours. But man, did the phones just lit up?
That's
it was hilarious.
Kathy.
All right, here's Jeff on WGN. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I got one for you. How about Verdell from As Good As It Gets?
Oh, that's a great dog, Verdell. Yeah.
Come on, where's the trust?
Yeah, yeah, Verdell. That was also a great movie. A really, really great movie.
Hey,
okay, Jeff, thanks, man. Oh, go ahead.
I got another one for you. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, how about the deer from Tommy Boy?
Yeah, the deer from Tommy Boy. Oh, man. We've got the monkey from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dunstan from Dunstan Checks In, the orangutan. Puffy from There's Something About Mary.
Wait, which one was Puffy?
That was the little dog. It was the dog that was owned by Mary.
Okay,
and it bit Ben Stiller, and he ended up throwing it up the window.
Yeah.
Verdell, by the way, was played by a dog named Jill from As Good As It Gets. That dog's name was Jill. Let's see. 847 area code says, horses, that poor horse that got sucker punched on Blazing Saddles, and the horse from Secretariat.
I like when they have the horse in the noose.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah.
I'm completely booked.
Yeah. Bob Blazing Saddles. That is a funny movie. 224 area code says Turner and Hooch. We got another vote for Turner and Hooch. 773 area code says Eddie from Frasier. Yeah, that's a great dog. That's a great dog, Eddie from Frasier. Um, 815 area code, Fred the Cockatoo from Beretta. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. What else do we got here? We've got Dulce from Young Adult. We've got Orca. So somebody picked Orca from the movie Orca, played by Orca, the whale. That is such a crazy movie.
That's the kind of Jaws ripoff, right?
Oh yeah. Well, listen, you know, Jaws came out in 1975, and for about 4 years straight, There was nothing but Jaws ripoffs for four. Orca's one of them. They just anything that was water related. If there were water related creatures, they all went nuts and started eating everybody. And that's basically what happened. And that's what Orca. Richard Harris was in that movie. That was Bo Derek. I think Bo Derek's first movie. Before 10. But yeah, Orca is a ridiculous movie. It is a completely ridiculous movie. Great score, though. Ennio Morricone wrote the score. That's the only thing I remember about, you know. I mean, I saw it a few times. But, yeah, everything. You know, you had Piranha, which is actually a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Piranha is actually a good one. And you had
The Day of the Animals.
Oh, yeah. One. Well, there was the Day of the Animals. That was a whole different thing. Another genre. That was a 70s thing, too. It was all like
animal attacks. Stuff.
Animal attacks and Nature Strikes Back and stuff like that. Day of the Animals is hilarious because... In case you're interested, that movie Day of the Animals features a scene with a shirtless Leslie Nielsen fighting a bear. So if you want to see Lieutenant Frank Drebin shirtless fighting a bear, that's your movie.
Mr. Magoo fights a bear.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Also, you know, because there was a time before the, you know, before Police Squad and Airplane, actually, because it started with Airplane. Before Airplane, Leslie Nielsen was, you know, considered a pretty straightforward, you know, leading man. But after Airplane, mm-hmm. after Airplane, that all changed. I mean, you can't look at the guy seriously. Like, you know, whenever you see, you know, because he's always going to be Frank Drebin.
Sure.
You know, or the doctor from Airplane. But yeah, that completely changed the trajectory of his career completely. It was really funny was when Naked Gun, when the first Naked Gun movie came out. And by the way, the TV series Police Squad that's Naked Gun is based on, one of the funniest shows in the history of mankind. And funnier than the movies. The TV show, I mean, I love the Naked Gun movies. They're very funny. But the TV show Police Squad, funnier than the movies. One of the greatest shows ever. Anyway, when the first Naked Gun movie came out, he also went on to star in a movie called Nuts with Barbara Streisand. It was his courtroom drama about Barbara Streisand trying to prove that she's sane enough to defend herself in court. So that's Richard Dreyfuss is her lawyer in it, and Carl Malden is in it. And it's a good movie, but she plays Barbara Streisand plays a high priced call girl in it. Leslie Nielsen is in it, plays one of her Johns, and is abusive and psychotic and tries to beat the hell out of her. And he's in his Speedos. So if you want to see Leslie Nielsen, like in his Speedos, you know, trying to attack Barbara Streisand, and you keep in mind at the same time Nuts was in the theater, so was Naked Gun.
Oh boy.
It was just so weird because it's not, you know, you're trying to picture Leslie Nielsen running around in his speedos in a very serious abusive scene.
Yeah.
But you still can't go, "Oh my god, that's Frank Drebin." So
it's an unfortunately titled movie too. I don't know if I saw a movie called Nuts. I don't know if
it's
it's
based on a play. It was a pretty popular pretty popular play. But anyway, Leslie Nielsen shirtless, you know, wrestling a bear in Day of the Animals and attacking Barbara Streisand in his Speedos.
Literally, what more could you want out of cinema?
Again, completely ridiculous. Okay, we got a few more animals here. If you guys want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. We're going to take a break here before we got weather, and then my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning, and that's what we do. It's a jokey time. We'll get my dad on the line here in a couple of seconds right after we break here. But here is your weather. Patchy mid-level clouds drift across the area this morning. Temperatures climb to the 40 to 45 degree range this afternoon. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Temps peak into the mid-40s. For Wednesday, windy and mild with periodic showers. The temperatures will climb to the low 50s. Evening showers and thunderstorms, and then partly cloudy. For Thursday, partly sunny and mild in the early afternoon. Sporadic showers. Temperatures will reach the low to mid-60s midday and then drop down to the 40s by evening. And then for Friday, blustery and colder conditions, including passing flurries. Temperatures will hold near 40 degrees for most of the day. It is currently 28 degrees at O'Hare. It's 29 at Midway and 30 at the lakefront. All right. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll get my dad on the line, and he'll call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. And then we'll wrap up the show with more talk about really talented animal performers. Okay? All right. We're going to break here right here on 720 WGN. We'll be right back with my dad's joke.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go. Witchy music intro.
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Yeah. What'd I say?
It's a jokey time. It's a jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes. Here we go.
Ah, yes. It is that time of week. Yes, and it is Monday morning, and that means that my dad calls in and tells a joke, because it's a jokey time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and let's say hello to my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
How's Ma?
Mom's great.
Good. All right, you got a joke.
Number 245.
Okay, number 245 jokes you've told on the show. Okay.
Yes. Guy breaks into our house last night looking for money. I got out of bed to help him look.
All right. That's a good one, Dad. All right, Dad. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
There you go. I woke up to give him to help look. All right.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
That's right, and he'll do it again next week, right here on 720 WGN. Okay, we've been talking about animal performances, great animal performances in movies and TV and stuff because of the new movie Captain Marvel. There is this really awesome cat in it named Goose, who basically kind of steals every scene that that he's in. And that got us talking about your favorite animal performances here. And here's Carl on WGN. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Nick. Well, one thing that always made me cry was at the end of Old Yeller.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my other question, movie Hot Shots, was that the Taco Bell dog they kept trying to sit on?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
It was a chihuahua, yeah.
We'll have to look that one up, Carl, and see what the what the credits are for that animal. All right.
Hi, have a good day.
All right, thanks, Carl. Yeah. Anybody who you know who says that they don't cry at the end of Old Yeller is lying. It's just ridiculous. Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Can't forget Fred from Smokey the Bandit.
Oh,
that old background.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's a classic dog right there.
Good old Fred.
Fred eating a cheeseburger. They got him a cheeseburger for the good old Jerry.
Taking a swim.
Jerry Reed. Good old Jerry Reed, man. I
so
love that
funny.
Movie. All right, Brian, thanks.
Hey, no problem.
Okay. Smokey and the Bandit. That's a classic. Just classic. Jackie Gleason is so funny in that movie. The other ones suck. The second one and the third one, but they suck. The second one was terrible. It was the Dom DeLuise as a doctor, and they're moving. They're driving a pregnant elephant that falls in love with Burt Reynolds. The terrible movie.
What? I mean, I kind of want to watch that out of morbid curiosity now.
Well,
I love really bad movies.
Well,
I love when stuff is
that's
like
a really bad movie. The third one's even worse. The third one is so bad, Burt Reynolds isn't in it.
Oh.
That's how bad it is. He makes one quick cameo. Even he was like, no.
So they made a Smokey and the Bandit movie without Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, Jerry Reed played the, you know, the bandit character in it.
Huh.
It's a terrible movie. Terrible. I mean, the first one's fantastic. It's a stupid movie. Smokey and the Bandit's a stupid movie, but it's really funny.
Best kind of stupid.
And God, Jackie Gleason. Oh man. Here's TJ on WGN. Hi, TJ.
Hey, how's it going? What about the dog from the Sandlot, Beast?
Oh yeah, that's a classic right there.
Yeah, I always remembered that dog growing up being a baseball fan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a memorable dog from the Sandlot. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, TJ, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're talking more about great animal performances here. And here's Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Morris the Cat did a lot of commercials.
Morris the Cat for Nine Lives.
Yeah.
I wonder how many Morrises there were, because I know there was more than one.
Oh, I didn't realize there were more than one, but that cat had quite an attitude.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that, you know, I think one of the Morrises passed away, and then they had to replace him. But I can't remember how many there were. But yeah, Morris the Cat from the Nine Lives commercials, and I can't remember who what actor did the voice, because that was a very distinctive, mm-hmm. Voice doing that during the Morris the Cat. So,
it was.
Yeah. All right, Mary. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. What about we mentioned Clyde from Every Which Way But Loose. How about Asta from The Thin Man? Asta, the dog, the classic dog, and that was actually Skippy was the name of that fox terrier. How about Keanu Keanu from the movie Keanu, which is a really funny movie. Really funny. Key and Peele, man. Key and Peele. And it was seven different kittens played Keanu in the in the movie Keanu with Key and Peele. So let's see. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
How about the horse and Cat Ballou?
Oh, wow. Well, you're going way back right there, Cat Ballou.
Well, I'm old.
Yeah. yeah. You know, if I'm not mistaken, I think Lee Marvin won the Oscar for that movie.
I think you're right. Yeah, Lee Marvin was drunk sitting on the horse, and the horse was asleep leaning over against the building with its legs crossed.
Right. Oh, Cat Ballou. Man, I haven't seen that movie in a long, long time.
It's a good movie. The only thing I don't like about it is the female actress.
Ah, you're not a big Jane Fonda fan.
I'm of that age where I would not like her.
Okay. All right, Tom. Thanks for the call.
Have a good day.
All right. Cat Ballou. Yeah, I'm trying to remember who Lee Marvin was up against. I'm trying to remember, but it was like somebody who, you know, they, like when Lee Marvin won, everybody was like, what? Everybody was like really shocked that, you know, this goofy movie where he plays this drunk cowboy, he ends up getting the Academy Award for it. Okay. How about Pauly from the movie Pauly? He was a parrot. Pauly the parrot. That's a classic one. How about the Black Stallion from the Black Stallion? Two different horses played that in the Black Stallion. Oh, here's a great one. Speck from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. The good old Speck. And it was played by Speck. That was the name of the dog. Let's see. We got Lou from Cats and Dogs. And we've got, Crystal from Hangover Part 2, played by Crystal the Monkey. And we got Rocco from the movie The Drop, and then Bleeker from Gone Girl, also considered a great performance. All right, let's see. Here is Bob on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I can't believe you forgot Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I haven't even thought of that movie in years. I remember seeing it. I remember seeing it in the theater when I was a kid.
Well, they made a TV show out of it later and had pretty much the same actors in it.
Yeah. I just remember, didn't they put glasses on him, too?
No, they never put glasses on him, but he and Judy the Chimp were perfect foils for each other.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. All right, cool. All right, Bob, thanks.
You're welcome, Bob.
Cross-eyed lion. How about in the TV world, Lancelot Link? You familiar with Lancelot Link?
No. What is this?
It's a TV series from the 60s, late 60s, early 70s. That is cast. It's all chimpanzees.
All right.
And he plays like a secret private eye, Lancelot Link.
So is Lancelot Link a chimpanzee?
Every single cast. The entire cast is chimpanzees. No, this was the late 60s when, you know, people were making TV shows that, you know, they'd blow a bunch of weed and then they would make TV shows. Oh, is Mary? Mary wants to say something about. Mary, you remember Lancelot Link?
Oh, I loved Lancelot Link.
Yeah.
I watched him all the time. But it was just, yeah, that whole era with, you know, banana splits and
right.
All the weird stuff that was going on.
We watched a lot of weird stuff when we were growing up, Mary.
We didn't think it was weird, though.
No, I know. All that Sid and Marty Krofft stuff.
Oh, man.
Just so strange. You know, like H.R. Puffin stuff.
Oh, I loved him, too.
The Sigmund and the Sea Monster. All of those weird things. And then you know, it was fine to just have a bunch of chimpanzees. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they like put peanut butter in their mouths so it looked like they were talking?
I think that's what they did because they were always looking like chewing. They were,
yeah.
And
they had
like
voices. People provided the voices for it.
Land of the Lost. That was another one.
Land of the Lost. Another Sid and Marty Krofft. No, that was weird stuff. No, yeah, Lancelot Link, man, go check that stuff out
on YouTube. Yeah.
Look it up on YouTube. You won't regret it.
Forget Game of Thrones. I could watch Lancelot Link.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was awesome.
Yeah.
By the way, Nick.
Yeah.
I retired as the refrigerator Nazi.
Oh, you did?
I did. I couldn't take it anymore. Yeah. When we got over here, there was beautiful refrigerators. I said, you know what? Let everybody else let them go to heck. Because I'm done. If you're getting yelled at all the time for, you know, throwing people's food away and this and that, I said, no.
Okay.
Let them see what happens.
I'm glad that you've retired from that then.
I did, yes.
Okay, all right.
Very less stressful.
Okay, that's Mary. She'll be doing the traffic for you this morning. And we're going to break here. And, we got the news coming up right after this.